This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Well, this is Space Week, and we are going to be all over space this morning. For starters, those of you that were listening to me on the Dominic Carter show a minute ago heard me promo one of my favorite guests, a guy with the best voice in all of radio, including me, but including most of the people that are on. They're on the radio. He is somebody who is an expert in the night sky, in astronomy, in aviation, in the weather. He is called an infotainer and an edutainer. I was talking about Steve Cates. So I text Steve a minute ago and I said, well, you can call in now if you're ready. And he said, oh, wait a minute. I thought we agreed that I was on next week. Sure enough, I look at my calendar. And I was all mixed up. We did agree that he's coming on next week. But I said, oh, come on. There's so much space news. I need you to come on this morning as well. And he's such a good guy that he graciously agreed to spend some time with us this morning as well. Steve, sorry for the mix-up, but I appreciate you coming to my rescue.
That's okay, Frank. Good morning. And good morning to everybody there on 77 WABC here. Yes, next week, hopefully we can get into the real deep details, but you are so right, Frank. There is so much to talk about here. And obviously, there's so many people out there that are kind of scratching their heads going, in such a short time, we have Richard Branson and now Jeff Bezos going to space. There's been some controversy about it with Bezos, but here's just the skinny for a quick wrap-up. We know, of course, that with Virgin Galactic, that Richard Branson and his successful team made it up to approximately 53 miles above the Earth. Some claim that that's not space, but in all due respect, I think it is. And then yesterday, everybody got to see, I thought, the most amazing launch of a very interesting rocket, similar to what Alan Shepard's type of flight, another of these suborbital type flights. And this time, Bezos and his crew allegedly got up to this high altitude of some 351,000 some odd feet. I think it's 351,210 feet, not to look at exactly. But that translates into somewhere up about 63 miles above the Earth. So regardless of what we think of both of these people, whether they should be spending money this way, or some people think they should, some people don't think they should at all, I know you and I agree. So I think it's a great accomplishment. Fantastic stuff in the history books.
Same here, Steve. And I will be appreciative and considerate of your time and let you do whatever you were scheduled to be doing. Hopefully that includes sleeping at some point. But I do have to ask you, with all of these billionaires and people buying tickets to go to space, a lot of people are wondering how that might change the definition of astronaut. These days, if we're going to live in an era where people can spend $24 million to buy a ticket to space or get into space not because they're there to explore or to be an aviator, what actually is the definition of the word astronaut? Is an astronaut anybody that goes to space? How do you define it?
Well, I would define it this way. If we go back to the International Astronomical and Aeronautical Union, and we look like this UN officiating organization that talks about where space begins, I don't know how NASA lowered the height altitude. Again, some people may think this is minutia, but they're claiming that 50-ish miles above the Earth is where space begins. But if we go back to a more technical definition, it's called the Kármán line, and that has been established for quite a while, calling it 60 miles above the Earth. But in order to make this thing go smoother, I think there might be, even in the astronaut corps of what we call the old school astronauts and the current ones that are in NASA's space program and the Russian space program, I think what they may want to try to do, I know this is not good for the space tourist people, and maybe they'll never change it, but maybe they'll come up with a definition that true space is the altitude of something like the International Space Station. just to give the listeners an idea about how high that is above the Earth, that's about 260 miles above the Earth. But you know what? I want to be light and happy on this whole subject like you do, and I'm sure a lot of people. Hey, let's call 50 miles space, and I guess that makes you an astronaut. But not in the same traditional sense as the astronauts who've trained for years. See, even on the Bezos flight, I understood that it's actually a day of orientation. And notice in their particular launch, even in their rocket, I didn't see, unless you did, Frank, I didn't see any heavy and expansive spacesuits on these individuals
No.
as they went up into orbit. So, again, I want to be the happy guy in this conversation like you are, and I'm sure many listeners. I think it's a great accomplishment, and you know why? Because it's simply done by privatized corporations and the privatizing of space. So the only problem is it's the non-affordability of that. I mean, I'm sure if you and I saved our money for the next, what, 5 or 10 years, I don't know about you, but just like many listeners, I'd have a hard time coming up with $28 million unless I was lucky enough, like you and I, to win a Powerball or some other type of switch thing.
That's for sure.
Even a step in the right.
Even still, we're talking with Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky, gracious enough to spend a few minutes with us on a week where everybody either is talking about space or should be talking about space. You can check out more of his shows and some of his blog items and a lot of interesting information at KTAR.com, KTAR.com. Steve, before I let you go, last question. Yesterday was the anniversary of Neil Armstrong walking around on the moon. Now that we've had more than half a century to look back at what a monumentous human achievement that was, two-part question. One is, how much of a game changer was that in the history of space exploration? And two, why have we not made it back to space, back to the moon, I should say, since the 1970s?
Well, Frank, the answer to the part one is that it was the most amazing game changer in all of space technology at the time. Because remember this, the Russians tried to go to the moon, and they realized that they had nothing like our Saturn V moon rocket, which had 7.5 million pounds of thrust. And as people know, or maybe they don't know, or we've forgotten, that tiny little area to the very top of the 365-foot stack was where the three humans were and the lunar module and such. But the Russians tried this, Frank. They tried to build a rocket called the N1. People could look this up, just the letter N1. It was this most amazing engine, and it had a similar rocket payload like that of what Elon Musk is trying to do on his future heavy lift rockets. It had many, many multiple engines, unlike the Saturn V, which had 5 of these F1 engines. And just to give people a quick analysis of how much energy was consumed. Each F1 engine, and I recommend people go to the Kennedy Space Center. I don't know if you've seen it, but the horizontal laid down Saturn V moon rocket, when you walk into the room, you're probably going to take a deep breath and go, oh my gosh, each of those bell cones on each of the F1 engines was over 12 feet in diameter. But this is how much fuel they allegedly used from RP-1 and kerosene and liquid oxygen. In 1 second, each engine consumed 1,350 gallons of fuel per second. So imagine that. But the reason we haven't probably gone back to the moon, we did it so many times. The problematic thing is the Russians never had the technology, at least maybe they could now. China's landed little robotic spacecraft, great success to their space program. But I think it's been something to do with finances and budgets. It's very expensive to bring the heavy lift materials to the moon. What they're trying to do is put some sort of little space station around the moon so that in future space programs like the Artemis project for NASA, Frank, they'll eventually have the ability to have a way to go up from the lunar surface like we do now to the International Space Station. And hopefully, maybe we can finally find the reason to go to the moon. And this is what Harrison Schmitt said, Apollo 17 astronaut. I've interviewed him a number of times, the only geologist to go to the moon. There is the isotope of helium, helium-3. People can look this up. If we could harvest this, it would be a great fuel to lessen our dependence on oil and even some of the other technologies. So I'm going to be positive as we close out for this particular segment that, yes, it's going to happen, but the cost has been so prohibitive, and we really haven't been focused. We had a space shuttle that pretty much took over the space program for the Americans. And the Russians tried it, but here's what happened, Frank. Their N1 rocket, sad to say, exploded on the launch pad, and people can look this up too, it killed so many of their Russian rocket scientists at the time that they decided to do this with robotic spacecraft. And as the Apollo 11 had landed on the moon 52 years ago, a small little Soviet, then of course appropriately called a Soviet spacecraft, one of the lunar probes, actually did land and soft land on the surface of the moon. They later brought back lunar samples, but they never did it by bringing humans to the moon.
Well, Steve, you are a trooper for pinch hitting at the last minute. I appreciate it. I have 2 hours worth of questions for you that I was going to squeeze in to 1 hour, and I will save them for you next week, a week from today.
Frank, I look forward to that, and I appreciate you, you know, staying in touch with me. I enjoy this tremendously, and again, the best to all the listeners out there. And just remember, if we have a second or two before you go to the break, just wanted to remind everybody that this is a great week as we see the moon, Frank, continue to grow. It will be full on the morning of the 24th. It'll be a spectacular moon called the full buck moon. And next week, Frank, I hope to jump into the subject of things that people can see in the New York listening area, and for that matter, all over the country, where 77 WABC is proud to be on the internet and everywhere else. But Frank, we're coming up to the best meteor shower of the year. It's going to start slowly coming up next week when we're on air to talk about this, but get set, folks. It peaks around the night of the 11th and into the morning of the 12th. And if you haven't seen this one from a dark location, because the moon will not interfere, I think this will be a good one. So we have a lot of good things to talk about.
Do you see what I mean? What a set of pipes he has. Unbelievable. Steve, it is always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend.
Likewise, Frank. God bless, and look forward to being there with you next week. Always remember what? Keep your eyes to the skies. I'm trying to work hard to continue to be your navigator on the highway to the heavens. Thank you for your time.
Well said. Dr. Sky, Steve Cates. Learn more about him at ktar.com. A lot of great stuff on there. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Really, any subject is fair game for the next hour, because I had earmarked this portion of the show for talking with Dr. Sky. So I have some other tricks up my sleeve, but if there's anything you want to address, now's the time to do it. I will tell you that all this talk of going to space, spending time in space, coming back from space, a lot of people always ask, what do the astronauts do in terms of food, and what do they do in terms of human waste? Well, sometimes it can seem like the whole process of digestion and everything involved with that, even on Earth, can be pretty stressful. Well, it doesn't have to be, because there's a terrific drink out. I made it today, although now I'm remembering I forgot to put it in the refrigerator. I left it on the stove. Honey, if you're listening, even if this is on the podcast, please remove that pot that's on the stove of Life Change Tea and move it to the refrigerator. Thank you. Now, in addition, if you haven't yet tried Life Change Tea, it is a terrific product. It's a daily detox. It's a cleanse. It cleanses you from the inside out. It gives you more energy without caffeine. I had some M&Ms before, some peanut M&Ms, which I'm kind of a sucker for, which I had forgotten have chocolate, which obviously has caffeine. But aside from those M&Ms, I haven't had any caffeine since I left here Monday morning. So I have been without caffeine, but Life Change Tea is something that gives you a ton of energy without caffeine, and it does what it's supposed to do in terms of detoxifying you. So I want to encourage you to try this stuff. Use the promo code Frank when you order. You can go to the website getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com, and use the promo code Frank. If you do that, if you use the promo code Frank at getthetea.com, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank. And the free shipping, by the way, is not just on the Life Change Tea. It is on any of those products, including I just tried today the vitamin A supplements that they sell on there. I haven't really noticed much of a difference. Yesterday was the first day that I tried it, but it's nice to know that you could get it shipped to you for free. So go to getthetea.com. Whatever your issue is, if it's vision, if it's energy, if it's the immune system, getthetea.com has your solution. But their bread and butter is definitely the Life Change Tea. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Excellent choice, Matt Sapienza. The great Nancy Sinatra. I am a huge fan of Nancy Sinatra. I have multiple albums of hers. I think she is just fantastic, and I am a big fan. So often, people that are the children of people that are famous so often first get identified as so-and-so's daughter or so-and-so's son. Nancy Sinatra has just an incredibly impressive body of work herself. So it is really always a treat to hear her music. You want to? We have open phones. Anything you want to comment on, now's the time. 1-800-848-WABC. You know, we have this Facebook group, and a couple of people on the Facebook group thought that I was a little rude to a caller yesterday in the 4 o'clock hour. First of all, I would just ask everybody to keep in mind that this is a radio show, and We try to be kind of fun. It's supposed to be kind of entertaining. Maybe, you know, you learn something occasionally. Maybe it's a little informational. But first and foremost, it's a radio show. So if someone's going to call in and go on and on and on and on and on and on for something that has nothing to do with the topic that we're discussing, you better believe that they're going to be subjected to some radio mockery. That is sort of the deal you make when you become a caller. You become a part of the show. And if you're going to go on and on and on without taking a breath for 5 minutes, then that's what's going to happen. So if you want to join that Facebook group, by the way, and participate in that conversation. I was surprised nobody defended me. I was waiting for one of the listeners to come in and defend me. Frank, it was a right to stop that conversation. But if you want to join that Facebook group, just go on to Facebook and type Morano Radio Fans and Haters, or you can just go to your web browser and type facebook.com/groups/Radio Morano. That's facebook.com/groups/Radio Morano. All right. We got more space talk coming your way in the 2 o'clock hour. Earl Swift is going to be here. He is a best-selling author, and he's got a new book out all about the lunar rover. I had no idea our trips to the moon, especially the last couple, was, really interesting. What I learned in this, I had no idea the lunar rover was this instrumental to our mission to the moon. Save that for 2:30, but Earl Swift will be here. If you're interested in space, that's a discussion that you are going to want to listen to. And then on Thursday mornings in the 3 o'clock hour, we try to do our AC report, and we have making his debut on the AC report today, Chuck Darrow. Chuck Darrow is a veteran journalist who has covered this stuff for a long time. So we're going to have a whole discussion about Atlantic City. There's a lot going on, both in the casinos and outside of the casinos. And they took a big vote yesterday, and they voted, the city council did, to get rid of the needle exchange program there. And I thought that was an interesting thing. Some interesting things happening in Atlantic City, both in the casinos and outside the casinos. Right, so Atlantic City is one of those places that they call a food desert. So they don't have a supermarket. Imagine that. They're actually building a supermarket. So a city the size of Atlantic City doesn't even have a supermarket. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and a whole bunch of other things. I want to get into this altercation that my friend Curtis Sliwa had on the streets of the Bronx a little while. Oh, I forgot to mention to Dominic. I was speaking to Curtis on my way in last night. And he said, oh, make sure you tell Dominic Carter that was only a block or two from where he went to high school. And I forgot to mention it to Dominic, but I know Dominic listens. So Dominic, courtesy asked me to pass that message on to you. Consider the message delivered. 800-848-WABC. Jeannie is in Queens. Hello, Jeannie.
Hello. How are you tonight?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Okay. I was glad to listen to this guest tonight. And I wanted to ask, I thought yesterday the moon was kind of reddish colored and an odd shape I had not seen before. It wasn't quite yet. I guess it's on its way to being full. Could anyone explain what the red color is from? Because he said that the full moon will be called the buck moon
in
a day or so.
It's interesting, Jeannie. I actually had that on my list when I thought I was going to speak with Dr. Sky for a whole hour. The full moon is going to be Friday. They call it a full buck moon. And evidently, it's going to look it's red or orange to some people due to, believe it or not, wildfire smoke, based on what I'm reading. So I had no idea that that smoke from wildfires could affect the color of the moon, or at least how we perceive the moon. But yeah, that's what's being reported, that this full buck moon that a lot of people are going to be able to see after sunset on Friday, and coupled with the smoke from the wildfires that are blazing across the west, it could make it appear red or orange in parts of the United States.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much.
Sure thing, Jeannie. I'm guessing that if people are up at this time, they're night owls, so people should know. I'm going to be watching it if I'm sober somewhere. I mean, even if I'm not, I'll probably make an effort to remember to set my alarm and look up at the sky. At 10:37 on Friday night, that's when it's going to have peak illumination for this buck moon. So that'll be the case then. 800-848-9222. The infamous Vincent in Brooklyn. Hello, Vincent.
Good evening, Frank. I enjoyed your show last night. I enjoyed your interview with Anthony DiStefano. And I have a question for you. What makes anybody think that when gangsters are being interviewed by the police, that they're going to tell the police the truth? And I say this because I have personally known detectives who were on the take and who were looking for anybody who was ratting on any family member. And you know what I mean when I say family member.
Mm-hmm.
And that information was passed along, whether it was a rat or about an investigation, and that person was taken care of, huh?
Yeah.
And what he said was, he said some things that were true, like some members of organized crime families did deal in hard narcotics. And I know a lot of those members who are pushing daisies right now, personally. Huh? I beg you to recall the photograph from the mid-70s of the heroin kingpin, Thomas Galante, when he got a couple of months out of prison, he started dealing that garbage again. And what happened? In the back of an Italian social club in East New York, what happened? Guys went in there and took him out. And some reporter from the Daily News bribed the lady on the second floor, the little old lady, and they stuck the camera out the rear window of the yard, and you could see Thomas Galante with his eyeball hanging out, a massive head wound, and his cigar hanging out of his lips. So as many people who tried and did sometimes succeed, a lot of times they met a bitter end.
Vincent, you're sure you don't mean Carmine Galante, right?
Right. I'm sorry. My memory fails me after how many years was that, Frankie? 45 years?
Yeah, I think it was 79.
Something like that?
Yeah, 79.
Great. You have a better memory than I am. But exactly, that's what happened. And I have personally known people who were warned not to do that stuff, not to sell that garbage, and they ignored the powers that were, and they didn't.
Vincent, let me interrupt. First of all, I'm glad you liked the interview, and I appreciate you calling.
I thought it was very insightful, but what I'm telling you,
I hear you. Let me pause there, Vincent. Not because I'm not interested in continuing to discuss this, but when I first started this show back in September, they warned me just stay away from two topics that they felt I talked about too much at the previous radio station that I was at. And one was La Cosa Nostra and organized crime. So maybe I'll launch a podcast one day where I just focus on this stuff. But for now, I have to kind of follow the limited direction that the station has given me. And the station gives me a pretty wide berth to talk about whatever I want. The only things they said were, maybe don't talk so much about this and this. And one of the thises was La Cosa Nostra. So, Vincent, I appreciate the call and your feedback on that interview. And I'll look forward to our next interaction. That is Vincent on loan from the Mark Simone Show. We thank the Mark Simone Show for making Vincent available to us. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I was going to mention this a little later, but I guess now is just as good a time as any. I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge that yesterday was the last day on the show for our producer, Christian Arnold. Christian had told me on Friday that he had accepted another position. I'm not exactly sure what he's going to be doing. But I think it's something related to social media or something. I don't know. But I got to tell you, Christian, those of you that have listened to this show know, has been an integral part of this show's growth. And I just wanted to publicly wish him the best, as I've done privately. I'm going to miss him a great deal. He's one of the more talented radio professionals that I've ever worked with, and really just a heck of a nice guy. And I don't remember meeting Christian. Christian claimed that I met him when he was working on the Curtis and Juliet show, and I would come and kind of hang out with Curtis even before that I worked here. And Christian would be there. And I don't remember meeting him, but he said I met him. But the first time I worked with Christian was, I guess, about a year ago. It was last July of 2020, when I was filling in on the Bernie and Sid show. And then Christian was filling in for their producer, Matt. And I thought he was terrific. I thought he was great. And I remember when this show first launched, Curtis, who does know a thing or two about radio, he said to me, make sure you get a really skilled engineer. And if there's any way that you can get Christian, somebody that not only knows the technical aspect of radio, but is able to occasionally banter with you, that would be a home run. So even though I really didn't know Christian that well, I talked to management about making sure that we had Christian on this show. And I got to tell you, that was one of the best pieces of advice that Curtis gave me. And Juliet basically had said the same thing. I knew Curtis and had much more of a history with Curtis than I did Juliet at that time. But they were all exactly right. And I'm really going to miss him. And I will tell you, Christian, and again, we want everybody to do well and move on to bigger and better things. And then Gabby went to another department as well. It is kind of a bummer. I mean, that's the nature of radio. I'm just happy to still have a radio show and be on the radio. But, you know, over the course of the last 8 or 9 months, it did feel as if we had a little bit of a radio family going. And sometimes when you have a family, the kids move out of the house, they get married and move to another state. And as is the case with Christian. So not sure who will be ultimately sitting in for him. But today we have the very able, as you might have heard during the top of the hour news, we have the very able Matt Sapienza. And are you with us the rest of the week, Matt? Do you know?
I am not with you the rest of the week. I'm presently right here. We have our friend Rob with us.
Is Rob with us for the rest of the week?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. Well, Rob seems great, too. And, are you great? You seem great. Okay.
Well, yeah. I don't
know. So. Okay.
He's good. Yeah, he's wonderful. Very good. I'm showing him the ropes. And I also want to say publicly that Christian taught me how to run this show. And this is the show on the station I know how to run the best. And it's a lot of, literally some of the most fun times that I've had at WABC have been working on this show. So I want to say, Christian, if you're out there, thanks for everything and best of luck in whatever it is you're doing.
Well, that's very nice. Eric is also in from Molly today, who, as I understand, was just a little under the weather. Eric, we're not going to pressure you to say anything nice about Christian. In fact, probably the less said, the better. Am I right? Yeah. Okay. But if anybody wants to stay in touch with Christian, I know Christian's on Twitter at C_Arnold01. That's C Arnold_01, and I'm sure he'll have updates about whatever he's doing next. And he still does his hockey thing as well. I'm thinking maybe I don't have to follow him on Twitter anymore now that he's not working here. He kind of twisted my arm to follow him. Now I don't feel a lot of pressure to follow him. So we'll see where he goes. But it's C_Arnold01. But he is going to be missed, sincerely. And he's someone who he and I became pretty close friends. And I'm sure there will be a couple of Atlantic City trips in our future as well. All right, 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
Frank Morano, 77-WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Coming up at 2:30, we'll talk a little bit more about space with Earl Swift. He's written a new book out about the lunar rover. And then we'll talk Atlantic City coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. Taking your calls at 1-800-848-9222. It's 1-800-848-WABC. One thing that I did want to update you on is a couple of you may have heard my interview with Larry Elder on Tuesday morning. Larry Elder, I thought, was very engaging, very interesting. And when I, one of the highlights of my day, my day, I know it seems sometimes like my life is pretty exciting, but during the week, my life basically is to do this show for 5.5 hours, try to stay awake for the drive home, sleep for a good portion of the day, prepare for the show, spend 2 or 3 hours with my wife where maybe we get to squeeze in a rerun of Cheers, sit in 1.5 hours traffic here, and then do the show again, right? But one of the highlights of my day is being able to spend time with Dominic Carter. Dominic hosts the show that precedes this one. If you're into New York politics, or if you're into urban issues, or if you're into good radio, you really have to be listening to Dominic from midnight to one. It's a tremendous, terrific show. But before he goes on, he and I sit in the same studio. And Dominic, a lot of time, will listen on his drive back home, and he'll hear the first hour of this show, maybe the second. And he said to me, hey, that interview with Larry Elder was really interesting, except for the fact that his phone kept cutting out. But is he going to make the ballot? Is he going to make it? Well, so if you didn't hear the interview, Larry Elder is running for governor of California. He's a radio talk show host. He used to be on this station right before Levin took that time slot. Elder was on this station in his slot. And I think between the time that I don't remember, in the early 2000s, or between 2002 and 2005, thereabouts. I don't know. Then Larry Elder decides to step away from his nationally syndicated radio show and run for governor of California. Big risk, especially in a state like California, where you're kind of a long shot running as a non-Democrat, especially in a recall election. So he decides to run, files his paperwork. The California Secretary of State's office tells him that he's off the ballot. They tell him he's done, you're gone, and they claim that he did not properly redact his income tax return that he filed. So Larry was here Tuesday saying that he was going to be put back on the ballot. And sure enough, yesterday he was. He filed this lawsuit, and the California Superior Court ruled that they threw him off the ballot wrongfully. So he will be on the ballot for in this recall election in California. Now, I still think I don't pretend to know California politics nearly as well as I know New York politics. And I don't know New York politics nearly as well as I pretend to know it. So I'm far from an expert. Don't confuse me for an expert on anything. But I think it's going to be very difficult for Larry. I think it's going to be very difficult to recall Gavin Newsom, just primarily because California seems to be a fairly liberal state, at least a majority of it. And I don't see them being willing to recall Gavin Newsom. And so I think the recall will be a no. I think you're going to vote no on the recall. However, it will be interesting to see if they do recall him, who gets the most votes in that recall election. But as it stands now, Larry will be on the ballot in that recall election. So I just wanted to bring you up to date on that. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. I want to say hello to Joe in Manhattan. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Frank.
Yes.
Listen.
I'm listening.
What's going on? First and foremost, regarding Christian is leaving. He's left already, I suppose.
Yes, I did not realize yesterday was going to be his last day, but I learned that before the show. Yes.
Yeah. He was an engineer, and he was very versatile. He would do the news as well as sports and everything else. My goodness. Anyhow, but Gabby is still there in your department?
No, she's on another department. But, Joe, what did you call about? What did you call about?
WABC, right? Radio.
Yes, she still works here, yes.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm calling about the U.S. team that lost to Sweden 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they hadn't lost to Sweden for about 6 years. And the U.S., as you probably know, is top in the rankings. They're the best team, and they won the World Cup in 2019, etc. Now, if you go to YouTube, right, and go to the comments, they have all the highlights of various sporting events, etc., right? So when you type out USA 3, for example, Sweden 0, right, that reflects the soccer result, and you'll see the comments made lambasting the United States players, you know, for breaking the rules and the policies of the Olympics, BLM, you know, apparel, wearing of that, as well as, of course, kneeling down, led by Megan Rapinoe. And so you will notice that now, of course, I've been reading it on a regular basis, you know, the goings-on, etc., YouTubers, what they've been commenting. Until 2019, they were all praising the United States back and forth. Many of them, the vast majority, are, by the way, conservatively linked. You know, they're more Republican. They're very patriotic people, you know. So I couldn't find one single person praising or sorry, praising the U.S. team or sorry that they lost. They were all happy, expressing their gladness.
Yeah, I think there were a lot of people rooting. I think there were a lot of people rooting against them, Joe.
Are you going to do that, YouTube? Will you do that when you get a chance?
I will take a look. I will take a look.
Great.
Thank you, Joe. 800-848-9222. If people don't know what Joe was talking about, Dominic and I were talking about it on his show, and he spent some time on it, and I know Rita did, which is one of the reasons I didn't have it on my list, because those two said everything there is to say about it, and I'm largely in agreement with what both of them said and what a lot of the callers said. But if you are just tuning in, the U.S. women's soccer team and some of the other, and the Swedish team, and I think the Chilean team, they took a knee. U.S., Sweden, Britain, and Chile all took a knee to protest racism, discrimination, and inequality. Now, again, I not to repeat what I said with Dominic, but picture you're a real victim of discrimination somewhere. Picture you are getting beaten, just for the sake of argument, by a racist cop, right? Let's say. And then all of a sudden, as you're being assaulted by this racist cop, you think, oh, Well, I feel a lot better about being beaten by this racist cop because Megan Rapinoe took a knee before the Olympics. I feel so much better about it. I mean, it's just ridiculous. This does nothing to actually help someone that's a victim of discrimination. May make them feel better. It may make them the toast of all the cocktail parties that they're going to go to. But it does nothing to actually work towards ending discrimination, in my opinion. You're welcome to disagree. And the other issue I had with it is the International Olympic Committee. I'm not paying too close attention to the Olympics this year anyway. But the International Olympic Committee, they approved certain rules. And part of those rules involved prohibiting athletes performing political gestures at these games. Now, what is this if not a political gesture? Of course it's a political gesture. Now, either they're allowed or they're not allowed. Now, they booted that other Olympic athlete for smoking marijuana. I don't think marijuana is that big of a deal, but the rules say you can't smoke marijuana. And as President Biden said, you violate the rules, you're out. Or as Robert De Niro says when he's firing that slots manager in the movie Casino, you're out. Love that scene. So then if the rules mean something, they mean something. But clearly they don't. Certain rules mean something. Others don't. This is one that doesn't. 800-848-WABC. Anthony is in Woodbridge, New Jersey. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing there? I'm calling about the topic you were talking about earlier, the so-called food desert areas. That's a myth. There's plenty of food, and there's plenty of stores that would love to service these desert areas. The problem being is that the people that live there pillage, they rob beyond belief. You can't imagine.
Well, hang on, exactly. Anthony. Well, hang on. So I won't dispute your. It sounds like you're more informed about the first part of it than I am. So I won't dispute what you're saying about how food deserts could be a myth. But the city of Atlantic City, it is true, there's no supermarket there. So it's, and I know a lot of people that live there, and it is very difficult for them to get things like fresh produce and all sorts of other things that people, that those of us that have a supermarket in our neighborhood take for granted. I know a lot of people that live there, they have to drive to another town, sometimes Ventnor or Margate or Brigantine, in order just to get things like fresh produce. So I hear what you're saying. There are places to buy food, but it is a big inconvenience not having a supermarket there.
Not as a big inconvenience to the distributors and these produce companies. They can't make no money there. They put a store up, and in a very short time, they're losing their asses. They're being robbed. You know, like, say if it's I'll pick a town, Woodbridge. You get 2% shoplifting. In Atlantic City, it's like 52% shoplifting.
Well, Anthony, you're not gonna get an argument from me that crime's a big problem there, and they have to do something about it. They did have a supermarket there until about 15 years ago. They're putting one up now. I hope they're able to get a handle on the crime situation. But you're right, the crime is a big problem, and I think part of the reason they voted to, and we'll talk about this more in the 3 o'clock hour, but part of the reason they voted to get rid of this needle exchange facility was because Atlantic City was basically becoming a magnet for drug addicts all over South Jersey. And what happens when you put a whole bunch of drug addicts in one community? Chances are they're going to go out and rob some people in order to buy some drugs. So, Anthony, thank you for the call. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is other side of midnight. That is Norman Greenbaum, Spirit in the Sky. 800-848-WABC. Mark is in New Haven, a place that is very well known for its pizza. Hello, Mark.
Oh, yeah, we take our pizza very seriously here, Frank.
Mark, have you spent much time in New York?
Yes, I used to work in New York.
How do you compare the pizza in New York versus New Haven?
You can't.
Well,
New Haven is better. I mean, I don't understand the question.
All right, you don't understand the question. Something tells me you understand the question just fine. But what's on your mind there, Mark?
Week before, you were talking to Sid about clothes, and you couldn't afford to do what Sid did because Joseph Abu didn't give you your clothes. So here's my suggestion. What I did, and I did this myself. Several years ago, I went into my local Joseph A. Banks, and I asked them to measure me. And I said, what size do I wear in your clothes? And they explained to me that at that time I was a lot heavier, but I wore a 48 port. It used to be called portly, but they didn't want to say that. So now they call it regal. And so that means that there's a shorter drop between the size of the jacket to the size of the waist. Usually in a regular standard men's suit, there's a 6-inch drop. If I have a 42 jacket, it'll be a 36 waist. But in the regal, it was 46 and 44. With me so far?
I'm with you.
So then I signed up for their email, and they have sales, and nobody should ever play full price to Joseph A. Bank. Everything is available on clearance sale for a fraction of its cost. I bought a $89 shirt for $14.
Wonderful. No, we're going to send them a bill for this commercial.
For $99, $69. So what I will do is, now that I've had the chance to explain this to you on the radio, I will send you a link or a copy of my email to your email, and you can look around and shop yourself and do what you want. And then if you got time for a little longer joke, I got one for you.
Well, to be clear, what you just said was not a joke, right?
Oh, no.
Okay. Well,
oh, no.
Good. I was beginning to think.
No. I'm your friend. I'm your friend, Mark, in New Haven. And I was completely serious, and that's what I did. I got my clothes on now. Probably $1,000 worth of clothes for $150.
You know, Mark, we're going to invite the listeners to do jokes at the top of the 4 o'clock hour. So I don't want to over joke them. So I'm going to ask you to put a pin in whatever it is you were going to, and then call back at four if you want. 800-848-WABC. Steve is in Manhattan. Hello, Steve.
All right, Big Frank. And listen, I just hope Vincent's not listening, because it was Bushwick, not East New York. And Bushwick at one time was an Italian-American stronghold, and that's coming from a Bronx boy. Now, the best pizza in the world, I would say, is a few hundred pizza places that share that title, you know? I've been brought out to Brooklyn at different types of pizza. It's just delicious. Now, on the women's soccer team there, first of all, when they won the World Cup back in 19, the one girl on the team threw the flag, landed on the
floor. I remember.
And Kelly O'Hara is the one who picked it up and say, it doesn't belong on the floor, that American flag. But my personal opinion about this, they could do all the protests they want, but we don't have to watch it. We don't have to do anything along the lines. I know you're not going to like what I'm saying. I don't have to deal with their advertisers or anything. And I've said that all along, but even with the media, with all the things, the New York Times, I mean, just boycott them. Don't have nothing to do with them if you feel that they're anti-American and anti-civilization. Okay, folks? And I believe in America, we should be rooting for the American teams. But when they are rooting against America, we don't root for them.
There you go, Steve. I think you're speaking for a lot of people. 800-848-9222. Michael's on the Upper East Side. Hello, Michael.
Hey, a quick question. I just Googled about half an hour ago when Dominic was on the current soccer team. Can you tell me how many black women are on that team?
I'm going to guess the number is either zero or one.
I think I counted three.
Three, okay.
I think. So why isn't there a protest that there should be more black women on that team? Why are they excluding black women?
You got me, Michael. I think if that's a protest you want to lead, Gary in Staten Island be right behind you. I think a lot of other folks would be as well. Next hour, my friend Curtis Sliwa is the Republican nominee for mayor. He went up to the Bronx to do a press conference on crime. What happened? Well, something that a lot of people never expected. I'll tell you when we come back. This is The Other Side of Midnight. In the words of the great Bob Barker, help control the pet population. Make sure you have your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everybody, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. So, Curtis Sliwa, as many of you know, used to be a radio talk show host here. He's somebody that I worked with for many years on the radio at two different radio stations. And then, even after we no longer worked with one another on the radio, he and I were in the leadership of a political party together. So we've been through the trenches together. We've been through thick and thin together, the good times and the bad. And we've certainly experienced more than our share of both over the course of the last 20 years or so. So I was pretty involved in Curtis's primary campaign for mayor. These days, he's got a more professional team around him, but I still speak with Curtis regularly. And I'm still on all his email lists and everything. So he sends me an email that he's going to be doing a press conference on the issue of crime on the corner of Fordham Road and Webster Avenue in the Bronx. And lo and behold, he is about to do this press conference. And there's a deranged man who randomly starts going off on strangers in the Bronx yesterday afternoon. So Curtis tries to calm the man down. And this guy was screaming like crazy. You could see the video. I posted the video from the New York Post at facebook.com/MoranoFan. You could see the video. This guy is clearly mentally disturbed. And he's ranting. He's throwing racial epithets out there. He clearly is not in his right mind, and he's screaming at everybody. And Curtis gets in between this fellow and all the people that he's shouting at. And he says to him, "Relax, relax." And then the guy starts just ranting. And then in fact, let me hear a little bit of that if I can, Rob.
You like my wife? It's what you like. You like my wife? You're your man. You're your father. You want to die for this? And you know why I live? And you know why I don't live?
Listen, look, you dropped your stuff.
So then one of the women that this fella is threatening, She's with her son. She whips out a knife. Imagine. I mean, that's how you know you're in the Bronx, right? The boogie down. You know you're in the Bronx when you can't even harass people without them whipping out a knife. So this woman whips out a knife, and Curtis goes from trying to protect the passersby from this mentally disturbed gentleman to now trying to protect the mentally disturbed gentleman from this woman who's now wielding a knife. And so the woman, he's able to then calm the woman down. He's able to restrain the guy who was ranting at everybody, and he convinces the woman, put the knife away. So he kept his cool, and you got to see the video because it's really a textbook example of grace under fire. And he stands between this guy who's clearly unhinged and this woman who's holding a knife and her child. The woman's shouting, stay away from me. She pulls out her blade and Curtis tells her, put that knife away. And she does.
And then the woman asked, get this man away from here, please. So Curtis puts his arm out to this guy who continued this whole time to yell racial slurs at the knife-wielding woman. And he basically walks him around, gets him away from the where everybody else was, and he gets him water because he said he could tell the guy was very badly dehydrated, and he calms him down. But there was no police, no ambulance. So I asked Curtis on the way in, and this was not clear based on the New York Post article. I said, what became of that guy? Oh, he's still on the street. He is still on the street. Now, the police, the NYPD said to the New York Post, it didn't appear any 911 calls had been made about the incident. Oh, well, excuse me. So this is a huge problem in our city. And then Curtis told me, and this was not captured on video and was not done in the presence of reporters, that two blocks away from where this incident took place, there was another, I don't know if he was mentally disturbed, but there was another guy who was poised to assault someone or commit a robbery that Curtis intervened with. But, and he was out there. The whole reason he was out there is he was doing a press conference dealing with, I think it was street vendors or something. But you have to wonder, this fella is still on the street right now, who could have easily been a danger to someone or could have been knifed by this woman. Or, you never know, he could have gotten control of that knife from that woman and stabbed either her or her son. How many others like this man are out there? There is completely inadequate care and treatment for the mentally ill in our city. And there doesn't seem to be anything resembling a strategy. You know, when this first started to get attention, they launched this Thrive New York City initiative that the mayor put the first lady, Shirlane McCray, in charge of, even though it's not clear she had any experience dealing with the mentally ill or mental illness. And lo and behold, it became a giant vacuum of money. They're still trying to find the $1 billion that she spent on it. It's not clear what she spent this money on. What it is clear is that it did very little to get mentally ill people off the streets. So here's my question for you at 1-800-848-9222. It's 1-800-848-WABC. What would you do? First of all, I think this more than anything underscores the kind of mayoral candidate Curtis Sliwa is. Can you picture any other Republican candidate for mayor handling this situation? Can you picture Nicole Malliotakis? And Nicole's a friend of mine. It's nothing against her. Nicole Malliotakis 4 years ago, or Joe LaHoda 8 years ago, or Mike Bloomberg 12 years ago. This is why, and Herson Barrero said this on New York One last night. Herson Barrero, to his credit, said, you can't underestimate Curtis Sliwa. And I really do think this is what's going to help Curtis break out, is he has been on the streets and he has the kind of street cred that most politicians don't have. And I know voters will appreciate that. But here's the question for you at 800-848-9222. What do you do? These mentally ill people are out there on the streets and they're a danger to themselves. They're a danger to others. And it doesn't seem to me that the city has anything resembling a proper strategy on this. And there was a fellow that I used to talk to who passed away, unfortunately, last year, named DJ Jaffe, who used to address the problem of the seriously mentally ill. And part of the problem is that we don't make proper use of Kendra's law. Kendra's law allows you to force someone to either take their medication or be detained in a treatment facility. That's part of the problem, but it's only part of it. I'm curious, if they put you in charge, you're the dictator of the city and the state for a day, what would you do about the mentally ill, the seriously mentally ill people that are on the streets right now, potentially a danger to themselves or someone else? What do you do? What do you do? What would you do if you were there today, and what becomes of this gentleman and so many others like him? 800-848-WABC, curious as to your thoughts. That's 1-800-848-9222. And again, if you want to see the video, you can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. Because I think Mayor de Blasio, one of his many great failures is he never really got serious on handling mental illness. And you have this situation where there's so much that need to be done. The city council gave the mayor and the first lady $1 billion for Thrive over 5 years. But they spent less than 12% of that on getting treatment to those who need it most, who are the seriously mentally ill. Instead, the money went to educational campaigns. It went to anti-stigma campaigns. It went to brochures. It went to PR campaigns, all designed to convince the public that officials were doing a swell job, while services for that guy atrophy. So you have to wonder what we could be doing differently. Because it was Shirlane McCray who insisted on placing mental health education units in libraries, but by design, neither the education units nor the consultants that worked in them are allowed to directly help people with mental illness. Now, think of how crazy that is. You have a mental health unit, a mental health education unit in a library, these consultants in schools, and they're not able to help people with mental illness. Meanwhile, the psychiatric unit at Allen Hospital in Inwood closed, leaving hundreds of seriously mentally ill people with nowhere to go. And the mayor did nothing to save it. So I don't know that Curtis knows the solution. I'm actually going to try and draft a white paper for him on some ways to address the mental illness problem. But he definitely knows it's a problem, and he wouldn't be allowing that a psychiatric unit at Allen Hospital to close, leaving all these seriously mentally ill people with nowhere to go. But a big part of that strategy, I'm telling you, has to be pushing for the expansion of Kendra's Law and making it permanent. And again, if you're not familiar with this, it allows judges to require up to a year of assisted outpatient treatment for mentally ill people with a history of going off treatment and becoming homeless or getting violent or getting arrested. And that law, when properly used, can dramatically reduce homelessness. It can dramatically reduce arrest. It can dramatically reduce incarceration. So while you hear the mayor and the first lady saying a lot of the right things, they followed the lead of those who believe that being psychotic and delusional is a right to be protected, which it's not. It's an illness to be treated. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Tom on Route 80. Hello, Tom.
Hello. Good morning, Frank. We speak about once a week, and I'm going to comment on what you said about 5 minutes ago about Curtis, about street cred. You said he has more street cred than most people. I think he's got street cred more than anybody, because he's literally on the streets. And you know that he's been there. And that's what I love about him.
I don't disagree with you, Tom.
Yeah. But he's just, I mean, if you want somebody that's literally for the people and have been around the people, here's the guy you want there. And he knows what he's seen it, and he's done it. And unfortunately, not a lot of the mayors we've had have done that. And I don't think he's going to get in. I hope he does. And I'm actually I'm fond of Eric Adams. I mean, I think he's going to do a great job as well, but I hope Curtis can get past all this. But I think we're in better shape than we are right now with either one of these candidates.
Well, look, I think we'd certainly be better off with either one of them than we would with Mayor de Blasio. You know, the thing with Eric Adams is, and I've grown to like him, too. When he first ran for borough president, I was very opposed to him. I recruited a candidate against him. I spoke out against him. I thought he was going to be a big problem. But he's done a lot of things over the last 8 years that have impressed me. But with Eric Adams is, he's all things to all people. He's the candidate sure. of Giuliani-style policing, but he's also the candidate endorsed by George Floyd's brother. He's the candidate that wants to rename streets that are named for slaveholders, but he's also the candidate that wants increased charter schools. The guy is all things to all people. I was talking with Curtis last night about this, and again, not to tell too many tales out of school, but we were talking about the specialized high school test, and basically we were talking about how Eric Adams was nowhere to be seen on this until it was a political issue that he could benefit from. So I like Eric Adams, too. I can't imagine that he would do anything resembling as bad of a job as Mayor de Blasio, but somebody tweeted, and thank you for the call, Tom. Somebody tweeted of Eric Adams, there is nothing you could say about his mayoralty if he's elected mayor. I think it was Michael Tay Sweeney. Michael Tay Sweeney said this, I can believe any outcome for Eric Adams, from best mayor in New York City history to Trump's running mate in 2024 on a platform of cops should be allowed to shoot you for looking at them crock-eyed and pretty much anything in between. That's the thing with Eric Adams, is you have no idea what you're going to get. Curtis, I think as you saw in this event yesterday, you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to get. I'm going to retweet that Michael Tay Sweeney tweet because I do think it's so on the money. All right, we're going to continue with your calls in just a minute. Then we'll talk with Earl Swift about the lunar rover. But first, I want to tell you a little bit about Life Change Tea. See, food was different years ago. It was minimally processed. It was free of pesticides. It was nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, that's not the case. It's loaded with preservatives, loaded with chemicals. That's why I love telling you all about this great product that I take every day, that I drink every day. It's called Life Change Tea. It's a tea specifically blended with a powerful herbal proprietary formula that can help give you more energy without caffeine. It tastes great. There's no fillers. There's no GMOs. It's completely organic. It's a mild cleanse and a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. Their slogan is the tea that makes you go, and boy, oh boy, does it make you go. So I drink it every day. I love it. And I'll tell you, I have been able to make the transition off of coffee seamlessly because of Life Change Tea. And it gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. And all the products over at GetTheTea.com, including the Life Change Tea, are all natural. They're all organic. They all do good things for you. And whatever you order on there, whether it's the tea or the vitamins or any sort of other supplement that you might be interested in, if you go to GetTheTea.com, that's GetTheTea.com, if you use the promo code Frank, you'll get to enjoy free shipping. GetTheTea.com, promo code Frank.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
All right, this is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano, 800-848-9222. I do want to mention, tonight in Coney Island at Maimonides Park, the Brooklyn Cyclones are playing. It's Irish night, and you know who they are having throwing out the first pitch? Malachi McCourt, who's been a guest on this show, who's a great guy, a terrific writer, whose brother, Frank McCourt, one of the best memoirists of all time, he's thrown out the first pitch for Irish night, and he is actually going to be singing between the first and second inning. I'm going to try and get there. I might be there. But honestly, it's just my whole day is basically preparing for the show, coming here, doing the show and sleeping. So to squeeze in one more activity, it kind of throws me off for 4 days. So I'm going to see if I can get there. It's going to be tough, but I'm going to see if I can get there. 800-848-WABC. Neil is on Staten Island. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Frank. I just got to say it. That last commercial about Life Change Tea, it said food used to be healthy. There's a video on YouTube about what the Cowboys used to eat. If you watch that, I don't even think you'll eat for a week. It's the most disgusting stuff.
Well, what I'm talking about, though, Neil, is like if food that you ate in the 50s or 60s that you bought in the grocery store, it would all fit what's now called organic food. All food years ago used to be considered what's now considered organic. That's not the case these days.
No, I understand, Frank. I'm just going back.
Yeah, no, I will check that out, though. That's funny.
As far as the mentally ill go, to be honest with you, the criminal mentally ill, I would just throw them right in Rikers. I wouldn't think twice. I don't care anymore. We got to protect the people on the streets. I mean, innocent people are getting hurt, and these people are roaming. They're out and out and out, and they do crime. Enough. I mean, whose rights do you have to protect now? Theirs, or do you have to protect the innocent people that are working or walking the streets? You got to get rid of them. You got to put them in Rikers. Let the criminal justice system deal with them. The mentally ill, it's just that's too bad. I mean, it's at a point where I say it's too bad. As for the other ones, it's not for me to say. I mean, you got to treat them. And they don't want to spend the money. I think it's all about money. And certainly a lot of money. The Democrats want to spend trillions of dollars. I can't understand why we don't spend it on Americans instead of spending it on the people coming across the border.
Well, Ed, thank you, Neil. Look, I've been to Rikers, and I've seen the mentally ill people in Rikers. Rikers is absolutely not the place for the seriously mentally ill. It's not the place because the facilities don't exist to care for them. It's not the place because those mentally ill inmates at Rikers are a danger to themselves and to other inmates and to correction officers. And they shouldn't be there. So the solution, in my view, is expanding services like what we saw at Allen Hospital, the psychiatric ward there. Now, unfortunately, Allen Hospital became the public face of this argument among healthcare workers after a woman named Lorna Green took her own life. So the hospital system where Breen worked had stress management. They had professional support procedures in place. But it's hard to identify at-risk people and almost impossible. We see this with all the cops that are killing themselves. Almost impossible to prevent them from committing suicide. If someone did recognize that this woman was a danger to herself, could she have been helped? Probably not. So Allen Hospital used the pandemic and the incident with Lorna Green, Breen, I was thinking of the Bonanza actor, the incident with Lorna Breen as an excuse to close its psychiatric inpatient unit. That's something that they wanted to do long before anyone had heard of the coronavirus. Now, what we need is more facilities like what they had at Allen Hospital. We need more of those facilities. The solution is not to throw them in jail because that's a temporary solution that makes things worse for everybody, makes things worse for the patient, makes things worse for the other inmates, makes things worse for the COs. So what we're doing in New York City is not working. What your solution, believe it or not, Neil, that might be more true than you realize. If you go to Rikers these days, some of the only people that didn't get let out are seriously mentally ill. So we actually are using the city jail system as a de facto mental health treatment facility. 800-848-WABC. We're going to talk with Earl Swift in just a minute. But first, let me say hello to Paul in the Bronx. Hello, Paul.
Good evening, Frank. I won't speak about what I normally do. I want to talk about Eric Adams. I had a front row seat to his antics when I was with the New York City Transit Police. You have to get Curtis to foil or subpoena his transit police records from the New York City Transit Authority. He was involved in all kinds of shenanigans, one of which was a fraudulent white supremacist cop group that he created with phony flyers put in our mailboxes. He was involved in a cheating scandal on a sergeant test. Bless all the unnecessary and unproductive racial animosity he created between white and black officers. And then when he lateral transferred to the NYPD, and you saw him up there on stage with Al Sharpton. He's
nothing
but Al Sharpton with a gun and a badge.
Well, Paul, thank you for the call, and thank you for not saying Twisted Justice at CNN.com. But I will say this. Eric Adams talks a lot about being a cop, and I don't want to make the whole show about Eric Adams and Curtis Lee. We're going to move on. Talk about exciting things like space and lunar rovers. Eric Adams talks a lot about being a cop. You notice he never mentions at all what he ever did as a cop, what arrests he took part in, what investigations he took part in. So Paul says we should file a FOIL request for his NYPD records. Well, I got news for you. We did. We did. Somebody that we're friendly with filed a FOIL request. That FOIL request was denied. Now, that's amazing to me because the New York State Legislature just passed a law allowing the disciplinary records of cops to be public. And yet we submit a FOIL request and it's denied. Apparently the one cop in the history of the NYPD whose disciplinary records should not be made public is the one who's the leading candidate for mayor of New York City. Does that make any sense to you? Doesn't to me. So what we're working on now is possibly filing a lawsuit to force them to release those records. We'll see. If you're a lawyer and you want to help us out with that, email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. We're going to talk space and the moon, why we haven't been there in 50 years, and maybe why we'll go back, and the importance of the lunar rover with Earl Swift in just a minute. But first, I want to talk to you a little bit about Trinity Rehab. Trinity Rehab is absolutely terrific. These are the folks that will restore your freedom to live your life pain-free. You can't go to space if you have plantar fasciitis. You can't go to space if you have chronic knee pain or neck pain or back pain. That's where Trinity Rehab comes in. This is cutting-edge, state-of-the-art stuff. They have something called the EPAT machine. This thing is so cool. It's an FDA-approved, non-surgical, acoustic pressure wave technology. It's similar to what they use to break up kidney stones. It breaks up scar tissue. It enhances healing, and it gets rid of pain fast. It's effective for conditions like back pain and all the other chronic pain conditions I just mentioned. No prescription needed to get started. And in just 3 5-minute sessions with the EPAP machine, you're going to be virtually pain-free. They have locations, Trinity Rehab does, all over the Garden State. Clifton, Paramus, Wayne, Short Hills, Emerson, East Windsor, Shrewsbury, Woodbridge. Call Trinity Rehab at 800-518-0977. That's 800-518-0977. Or go to trinity-rehab.com.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
It's the boys as they stand in line. The smell of gun grease and their bayonets, they shine. He's there to help them all that he can. To make them feel wanted, he's a good holy man.
By Eric Burden and the Animals. When we're talking about aviation, when we're talking about what's in the sky, I don't think there is a more impressive development in the history of human innovation, technology, and civilization than what happened this week in 1969 when the United States landed on the moon. Now, we made several missions to the moon, haven't been back in a while. We'll discuss why that's the case. But so much attention has been paid to the, rightly so, the astronauts that went up there, the spaceship that took them up there. Yet, there's a crucial piece of technology that you heard very little about in terms of the Apollo missions. One book that explores that and a whole bunch more related to the moon landings is Across the Airless Wilds, the Lunar Rover and the Triumph of the final moon landings. Its author is Earl Swift, who joins me this morning. Earl, thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Frank, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. So you spent a lot of time in your book focused on the lunar rover, which honestly, until reading your material, I had no idea how cool and what an impressive piece of technology and what an innovative piece of technology this was. What is or what was the lunar rover?
It was a tiny aluminum go-kart, essentially. It weighed 460-some-odd pounds on Earth, about 80 on the moon, and it folded like a business letter to store on the lunar module, and it changed everything about Apollo. As humble and stripped down as it seemed to be, as underpowered, I mean, it had all of one horsepower, it proved to be the difference maker in the last three Apollo missions. And you mentioned the 52nd anniversary of that first Apollo 11 landing. The 50th anniversary of Apollo 15 is coming up a week from Saturday. And that's really the mission that where everything started to change, where we actually got really good at it.
So what was the first mission in which the lunar rover was used? Was it Apollo 15?
Yeah, it sure was.
Okay, and
15, 16, and 17.
So aside from the weight, which is pretty heavy, obviously, what's the size of the lunar rover that was used on the Apollo 15 mission?
Well, if you parked it next to a modern Mazda Miata, about the smallest car on the road today, the Miata would outstretch it by about 2.5 feet. It was teeny tiny. I mean, it was barely there. There was the seats looked like beach chairs. The tires were made of wire mesh. It was a car reduced to its indivisible minimum.
And
you take it down to the very barest that you can build a vehicle on wheels. This was that.
Why was it such a big deal? I mean, why did they need something like the lunar rover to make the lunar missions a success?
The easy answer is that moving in a spacesuit is almost impossible. You're wearing a suit that weighs more than you do with the backpack that you're wearing. It's 21 layers thick. So imagine wearing 12 raincoats, one over the other, a dozen raincoats. This is a heavy, unyielding garment. And then you pump it full of air to the stiffness of an all-season radial. So you can, moving your arm, bending your arm takes real muscle. Closing your hand around a tool would exhaust your hand in a matter of minutes. You put that on an astronaut and you ask him to walk around in 1/6 gravity, which he's been in simulators, but they're only so good. He's in a very weird environment all of a sudden. He can't see his own feet from inside his helmet. It was very difficult to move from point A to point B, and we all remember the grainy TV footage of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin kind of bunny hopping around the lunar module on that first flight. And the fact was that bunny hopping was a lot more work than it was fun. And that work translated into higher metabolic rates, and those translated into much faster use of the air and cooling water in the astronauts' backpacks, meaning that not only were they physically limited in how far they could move, but they were limited in time because it was so difficult to move. And so as a consequence on that first landing, the farthest that either man traveled from the lunar module was 65 yards. All of their travels would fit inside a football field with a lot of room to spare. Then Apollo 15 came along 2 years later with the rover, and they drove 17-plus miles. They covered an area that was 100 times the size of that Apollo 11 did. They were able to sample, they were able to do science in a wide variety of places that would have been impossible on foot. They went hundreds of feet up the side of a mountain the size of Kilimanjaro. They sampled along the edge of a canyon that was a mile wide and 1,000 feet deep. They explored an undulating plain, crisscrossed it back and forth. It was like a half dozen earlier missions combined into one.
And one of the, and for people just tuning in, we're talking with Earl Swift. He's a journalist and author. His new book is Across the Airless Wilds, The Lunar Rover and the Triumph of the Final Moon Landings. If you're interested in buying the book, you can go to his website, earlswift.com, or order it wherever books are sold. One of the things that I enjoyed about your book is that you do spend a lot of time getting into the last mission to the moon, the Apollo 17 astronauts, who, I'll be honest, before I picked up your book, I couldn't even tell you their names if I had a gun to my head. Why do you think, given the fact that they really did accomplish a lot, in part due to the lunar rover, why do you think we don't talk about them and celebrate them and learn about them in school the way we do Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and John Glenn?
Well, I think that the shadow cast by that first mission was pretty extreme, and the other, you know, the later missions just dimmed in it. You know, we all witnessed Apollo 11 as one. I mean, the entire world watched in real time on TV as those guys stepped, you know, took that one small step. And, you know, oddly enough, it seems impossible to get my head around it today. Anyway, by Apollo 12, it was becoming commonplace. By Apollo 14, no one was watching. And the rover did reinvigorate public interest briefly in Apollo 15. And partly because the TV was so much better. It was, and that's a huge key to the rover's value as well, is it had a TV camera mounted on its front bumper that was controlled remotely from mission control in Houston. So you got to follow these guys around as they did all this traveling. But I think basically it's that we, you know, there was this one huge experience that we all had, and it was a tough act to follow.
Who developed the lunar rover?
Well, it went through a long evolution that dates all the way back, probably to, if you wanted to get tell the whole story, back to 1952, and Wernher von Braun. He's the one who came up with the first kind of vision for what it might look like. It wasn't anything like the one we got, but ultimately, the three rovers that went to the moon were developed by mostly by General Motors with Boeing as their partners. And General Motors spent about a decade developing the pieces of the rover for use on other machines, for use on other earlier moon machines that never came to pass. And then when NASA green-lighted the rover after Apollo 11's first landing, it was a kind of a breakneck, hell for leather dash to get the thing built in time for Apollo 15. General Motors already had the pieces pretty much, you know, already designed, and then they just put them together. But it was not the same General Motors division that developed the Vega at the same time. Thank goodness. It was a defense research lab branch of the company that was in Santa Barbara, California.
What made you choose to write this book, Across the Airless Wilds? What prompted it?
Well, I turned 13 the day that Apollo 15 landed on the moon. And I don't remember the earlier missions. When Apollo 11 landed, we lived in England, and, you know, it happened in the middle of the night with the time change, and my parents didn't let me stay up to watch it. And I don't remember the succeeding two landings. And the only thing I remember of either of those is Alan Shepard hitting a golf ball at the end of Apollo 14. But I do remember Apollo 15, and I remember the later two missions. And partly that was because I was, you know, I was a teenager as of that day. And so I was a little bit more aware of what was going on around me. And partly it was because we had moved to Houston, and everything happening with the lunar program was pretty inescapable. But mostly it's because I remember that they had this new piece of gear with them. I remember the astronauts drove a car, and to the teenage me, that was memorable and incredibly cool. And so in 2019, when my editor at HarperCollins sent me an email saying, you know, I've been thinking it might be kind of cool to look into the lunar rover, he didn't have to go any further. I was on board.
Talking with Earl Swift, his new book, Across the Airless Wilds. In your view, why have we not been to the moon since 1972? It seems like there was clearly a lot to be said for continued trips to the moon, a lot to be said in terms of innovation for anything from the automotive sector to variety of other commercial technology sectors. Why? I know we're planning to go back now, but why have we not been there since 1972?
Well, you know, originally Apollo was supposed to go up to Apollo 20. There were going to be 10 moon landings. That was the original vision for the program. And it would just be the first chapter in a long lunar campaign. And the expectation at NASA and elsewhere at the time was that after Apollo would come another program of several landings that would, you know, lengthen the stay of the astronauts on the moon. And eventually we would have some sort of semi-permanent colony up there. But what did in Apollo, you know, shortened it, truncated it quite a bit, and nixed all the follow-ons was, in a word, money. You know, we were in Vietnam. It was costing a ton of money. We had a raft of social problems that seemed more and more daunting. And I think that there was great public after that first landing, I think there became declining public support for spending money on the moon when we had so many obvious needs for that money, you know, here on Earth. And that's really kind of there were a lot of little ancillary, you know, issues, but that it comes down to that more than anything. And, you know, and the space shuttle was a very attractive follow-on program, because it was reusable. You know, one of the big knocks on Apollo was that the only thing that came back, the only piece of the rocket that actually returned, was the capsule. Everything else was discarded along the way. And, you know, that's a lot of hardware.
That sure.
Did not come cheap. And, you know, I know that Apollo 15 cost $450 million in 1971 dollars. And that was a lot of cash.
So now we're planning to go back to the moon. Hopefully that does come to fruition. But do you think that there is still value? I mean, it's the Artemis program that hopefully will result in a lunar mission within the next couple of years. Do you think there's still value to continued trips to the moon and going back to the moon?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, we haven't even, you know, we haven't sent a terrestrial, you know, robot to the moon since Apollo. We've done very little. We've kind of leapfrogged past it, and we've kind of skipped a lot of steps along the way. And there are some missions, you know, there's great debate. There's always been great debate between robotic missions and manned missions, and the value, the comparable value of each. And it's, you know, it's true that robotic missions are much cheaper, and they can yield an awful lot of information. But it's also true that the astronauts would argue, and I tend to agree with them, that there are some missions on which you just can't replace a set of human eyes attached to a human brain that can analyze what those eyes are seeing and report back in real time, you know, not only the cold, hard statistical facts of a particular environment, but the, you know, what it feels like to stand there. And I think that we as humans, that sort of information really resonates. That's not just atmospherics. It's important. And so, yeah, I see value in it. I think that, you know, if we're going to get serious about sending missions to Mars, as seems to be the general direction in which we're heading, the moon is a good place to practice.
Well, Earl, we're going to have to end it there. My guest has been Earl Swift. You can check out his new book, Across the Airless Wilds, The Lunar Rover and the Triumph of the Final Moon Landings. Go to earlswift.com. Check out not only that book, but some of his other books as well. Earl, I enjoyed the conversation very much. Hopefully we can do it again soon.
Thanks so much, Frank.
If you want to comment on any portion of my conversation with Earl Swift, you can give me a call, 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. 800-848-WABC is our telephone number if you would like to comment. So I was reading the Wall Street Journal magazine, and they have this big article all about a podcaster named Alex Cooper. And she hosts a big podcast called Call Her Daddy, and she's doing very well. I think she just inked this new deal with Spotify to make $20 million a year. And the headline of this Wall Street Journal piece is Call Her Daddy host Alex Cooper wants to have the biggest podcast in the world. Now, I have never heard this, but I know she's got a lot of fans. I'm sure there's a lot to be said for it. It's kind of raunchy. It's, you know, kind of a it's raunchy talk and female empowerment. I'm not familiar with it. I've never heard it. But more power to her if she can, as a broadcaster or a podcaster, make $20 million a year. God bless her. But the thing about this show is, if you're listening to this show right now, there's one thing you should know about it. This is the only show like it in America. What do I mean by that? Well, quite frankly, and quite literally, Tom Liu warned me about using superlatives before to say only and never and no one. And that's all true. But in this case, I think I am being literally true. This is the only live and local mainstream talk show in America that's on in overnights at this time. I was listening to the radio as I was driving in, not last night, but the previous night. And I scanned up and down the dial. And I have 60 presets on my radio, AM stations, FM stations, satellite stations. And I counted a total of 4 stations offering live programming. 4 out of the 60 that I scanned. Everything else was stuff on tape or stuff pre-recorded or replays of other things. And wouldn't it be nice if every station in America had a show like this one? Well, what can you do to make that happen? Well, I think the only thing that we can do is to show that this show is having an impact on people and to make this podcast, the podcast of this show, the biggest podcast in the world instead of Call Her Daddy. Because you know what's happened with Call Her Daddy? Ever since Spotify signed her for $20 million, you have all these other podcasters that are now doing these bootleg Call Her Daddy ripoffs. Well, I want people to rip off this show and do quality live and local talk at radio stations around the country. So what can you do to make that happen? Well, there are 5 things that you can do. All right, we'll call it 6. 6 things that you can do. First and foremost, you can subscribe to the podcast. If you have iTunes, if you have Spotify, if you have any podcast app in the world, just search The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano and press the subscribe button. Arthur Idala, I was talking to him last night. He said, oh, I like that you guys get the podcast up right away because it's easy for me to find. I just go to Google. I type in the name of the show. I said, Arthur, no, don't do that. Just press subscribe in any podcast app that you have. If you don't have a podcast app, just go to the website fmwabc.com. You can always catch up on any podcast that you might have missed. But it's much better to subscribe because then you automatically get it downloaded to your phone each day. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you have iTunes, leave a positive comment about the podcast and leave a positive rating about the podcast, because then you'll help other people find this podcast. For instance, my cousin Deanna, her husband Joe, this podcast came up as a recommendation on Google Podcasts recently as a show that he might enjoy. And I think part of that is because more people are rating it and more people are listening to it and more people are subscribing. The other thing you can do is please like the Facebook page, because in order to show other stations that a live and local show is working, we need to show that we're having a substantial impact on social media. So go to facebook.com/MoranoFan, click follow or like, and you'll be able to see all the articles that I post related to the show. We also have a Facebook group that you can join. Just go online to Facebook and type Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. And the final thing that you can do if you want to help this show grow and help show other stations that a live and local overnight show can work is to follow me on Instagram, which I like to call Instantgram, as a tribute to Dan Rava, which he called it 7 years ago. You can find me on Instagram at Morano Vision. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Vision. So subscribe to the podcast, like the Facebook page, join the Facebook group, follow me on Twitter and Instagram. Next hour, we'll talk Atlantic City and a whole bunch of other exciting things. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morning, everybody. This is The Other Side of Midnight. You know, one of the things I like, and you can tell by my focus on science fiction and things like Star Trek and Back to the Future and so forth, one of the things I like to do is watch films that take place in the future. And I, you know, you name it. Any film that takes place in the future, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, comedy, drama, dystopian thriller, whatever. I'm a sucker for it. I will watch it. If you say that there's a film that's a time travel movie or that takes place in the future, I'm in. And so one of the funny things about stuff that takes place in the future is that now we've started to pass those dates, and a lot of the technology in those futuristic scenarios hasn't really come to fruition. The best example, look, there's different things that you can look at. If you watch the movie Demolition Man, I think Demolition Man takes place, the beginning of it, in the 1990s, maybe the late 90s, early 2000s. And we're nowhere near being able to cryogenically freeze people like that. Now, you look at, you name the film, the Back to the Future Part 2. I think that took place in 2015. And there's hoverboards, there's all this cool stuff. We don't have any of that stuff. The best example, though, is the Jetsons. The Jetsons, if I'm not familiar, I'm going to look this up, but the Jetsons took place, I want to say, in, it was supposed to take place in the 1990s, right? When did the Jetsons take place? I'm gonna look that one up. So don't quote me on that. It's been a while since I have, it's been a while since I've seen an episode of the Jetsons, and they have the flying. Okay, so the Jetsons took place in 2062. Okay, that's 40 years from now. Point is, we are a long way away from the flying cars that were ubiquitous in the Jetsons and in Back to the Future Part 2. Where are our flying cars? Why have we not gotten flying cars? Well, flying cars doesn't seem likely in the short term. But there is a piece of very interesting technology that is just about here. That's self-driving cars. Fully self-driving cars. Cars that do not require a human driver. And now it's being reported today that fully self-driving cars are now being tested on New York City streets. Two Ford Fusion models were specifically customized by Mobileye, an Israeli firm that's owned by Intel, and they are testing them. They got a special permit allowing its test drivers to keep their hands fully off the steering wheel while the cars drive themselves in the streets of New York City. So here's the question. The question is this. Would you feel comfortable riding in one of these self-driving cars? 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. If, let's say, these tests go well, what would it take to get you in one of these self-driving cars? These cars that are being tested right now in New York City allow the test drivers to keep their hands completely off the steering wheel. Now, New York decided to allow this after reviewing the results of Mobileye's testing in other crowded cities like Tokyo, Tel Aviv, and Detroit, in which they did these tests and it went well. So would you ever ride in one of these self-driving cars? 800-848-WABC. We'll make that the question of the day.
A question. Since before your sun burned hot in space and before your race was born, I have awaited a question.
And then be prepared to answer with a why or a why not. The first time I remember someone asking this question was about 5 years ago. And I was driving from Cape May, New Jersey to Long Beach Island, New Jersey. And my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time. My girlfriend was in the car with me. And our friend Rich was in the car with me. And Rich basically said he was living in D.C. at the time. And he used to live in New York. And that's how we knew each other from his days living in New York. And he was talking about making that drive up from D.C. to Cape May or D.C. to New York City. And he was saying, I can't wait until these self-driving cars are ubiquitous, because this way I'll just be able to sit back, relax, maybe sleep, just chill out and not have to worry about driving the whole way. And then my wife says, well, I don't know that I would ever trust a self-driving car. And Rich retorted that, well, if you've ever been in an airplane, that's basically a self-driving car, a commercial airliner. And his view, and I don't know enough about the science to say if that's true or not, but his view was that a lot of the job of a commercial airline pilot is just kind of supervising controls. So his view was that we're riding essentially in self-driving cars every time we take a commercial airliner. So I'd be curious what your level of willingness to accept this is. If these tests go well and they say they're safe, would you ride in a self-driving car? Because there's different types of self-driving cars. They have ones with steering wheels that you can override. Then I think they have, see, my friend Vinny, who was in here with me one night, he's kind of an expert on self-driving cars. They have one that's a stage 5 or a stage 1. I don't remember which stage is which doesn't even have a steering wheel. And you just get in the car, you kind of plug in your destination, and you go. I'm very conflicted about this because I don't like to drive. And a lot of times, now, fortunately, my wife doesn't like my driving either. So whenever we go somewhere together, she is generally the one that ends up driving. And if I'm going somewhere where, you know, I'm going to have a drink or two, nowadays I just take an Uber. So I am wondering what the public's willingness to accept these self-driving cars will be. Give me a call and tell me. 800-848-9222. 8 open lines if you want to jump on board. We're going to talk Atlantic City with Chuck Darrow coming up at 3:30. 800-848-WABC. But Melvin in the Bronx has been patiently holding. Hello, Melvin.
Yes, I'm a firm believer in solutions. When you talk about rackets out and mental illness, because you want a solution to a situation, you find out what caused the situation in the first place. Keep in mind, that when Nelson Rockefeller was governor of the state in New York, he closed down all the state mental institutions except for two. And that's why he got the situation he got there. Also because of the way the legislature that put law into effect. They refused to pay for the resource because jail and penitentiary is a problem of a failed education system. If the United States or North America can rebuild Europe and Japan after World War II, why is it they can't even refuse to invest in this country today, and yet they send all this so-called far away outside of the country? Then you got a building on 44th Street and 1st Avenue, which refused, was a direct result of World War I with the League of Nations and World War II, that refused to show that you got all these people come from other countries because they refused to fight to correct what's incorrect in their homeland. While my ancestors fought for the 13th, 14th, 15th, 19th Amendment and the Executive Order 9981. The hypocrisy of the United States of North America is evident in his Declaration of Independence. So until you're ready to correct that and put the truth in the critical, we won't go through this mess again and again and again.
All right, well,
you go out there and put the resources there because this country got plenty of money.
Well, Melvin, I agree.
You got to look at prohibition.
All right, Melvin, I let you talk. Let me get a word. Melvin. I like the Declaration of Independence. And if you're talking about putting resources into a place, I'm all for investing in mental illness. Let's invest as much as you need to. But the problem, as we've seen with this disaster that was Thrive NYC, the problem is not mental illness. The problem is not spending. The problem is how the money is spent. They spent 12% of $1 billion helping people that are seriously mentally ill. 12%. So the problem is not getting the billion. It's how you spend the money. And so you're not going to get an argument from me there. I like the Declaration of Independence. I think it says a lot of good things. There you have it. All right. But also on the driving front, and I'm shocked that so far nobody has called in to tell me whether or not they would be willing to drive or ride in a self-driving vehicle. It's a very simple question. It's a yes or no question, and then a simple explanation as to why. If you want to offer that simple answer, you can call me 800-848-9222. This is in light of the news today that a company has now received a special permit allowing its test drivers to keep their hands off the wheel in cars that drive themselves here in New York City. Although I'll be honest, the traffic has gotten so bad in New York that it's taking me routinely almost 2 hours to get to work each night. And tomorrow I'm taking a different route. Every day I'm sitting in traffic. Every night I'm sitting in traffic and vowing I'm not going this route again. I'm not going to do it. And then every day I said, all right, let me try it again. I've allowed myself plenty of extra time. Let me do it. And every day I get screwed. So tomorrow I'm going through New Jersey. That's it. But I do wonder, because I tweeted about this before, and somebody tweeted at me that they're intentionally not doing, meaning the city, I guess, they're intentionally not doing anything about traffic congestion because they want to make the case for congestion pricing. So, look, part of my nature is I'm a little bit conspiratorial. That's how I got to be on overnight radio instead of on during the day. But I wonder if there's anything to that. I'm not saying that's the case, but would that shock anyone? If in order to sell, because a lot of the problem that I'm experiencing on a nightly basis driving in here has nothing to do with traffic volume. It has nothing to do with accidents. Well, sometimes it does. Two nights ago it did. There was a lot of accidents. But most of the time it's because they're doing construction on the Brooklyn Bridge, on the Verrazano Narrows Bridge. Would it surprise anyone if the mayor and his DOT commissioner and other people that are involved in making these decisions said, you know what? Let's do construction on these bridges at times that there's going to be a lot of traffic. This way, New Yorkers get really ticked off about traffic congestion, And then it'll be a lot easier for us to sell them a congestion pricing fee. You know what? It's not the craziest idea that I've heard. 800-848-WABC. I'm not saying it's the case because, look, the mayor's going to be out of office in 5 months, and I have no doubt that he fancies himself as a candidate for governor. But the congestion pricing plan, there's a board and a committee, and they got to come up with a plan. The congestion pricing implementation wouldn't begin until 2023. So that'll be long after de Blasio is no longer mayor. So if he was going to stage it, I don't know that that would make sense if it's not going to be implemented until a year and a half after he's out of office. But curious, would you drive a self-driving car? 800-848-9222. Question two is this traffic congestion that I've been experiencing nightly? I've never seen it this bad. 2 hours to get to work each night. Is this maybe intentional in a Bridgegate sort of a way, in order to make it easier for us to swallow a congestion pricing fee? Those are the two questions I want you to answer. 800-848-WABC. Michael is here in Manhattan. Hello, Michael.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great.
I've been listening to your show this evening. It's very nice.
Well, thank you. Why do you sound so surprised?
I'm not surprised. I guess I'm surprised because it's in the middle of the night, and it's nice, you know?
Well,
just
thank
driving
you,
around,
Michael.
Parking.
Hopefully you'll make it a habit. Michael,
we're driving around the city right now finding parking. I was thinking if we were in a self-driving car, might not need to do that.
Oh, you'd still need to find the spot, I guess, right? Or the computer would, the car would, however it works. I don't know how parking works.
I don't know, but I would assume maybe the computer could do it for you. And in the city, that's a nice luxury, you know.
It is. So
I could go to sleep. I could have been in my apartment an hour ago. While I'm driving around my neighborhood finding parking, I could have been in bed.
So, needless to say, you would happily ride in a self-driving car.
I would. I probably would trust the self-driving car more than myself. Maybe that's naive, but there are a lot of accidents on the road. People texting and driving. People falling asleep at the wheel.
Computers don't text.
Well, they do, but they do it. They do it mindlessly. You know, they do it in the background.
Well, no, exactly. And that's kind of my view, Michael. And again, I'm of two minds about this. And I appreciate the call, and I appreciate you listening. And good luck finding that parking spot. If anybody passes, Michael, as you're looking for parking, beep at him. What block are you on, Michael?
We're on 164th and Edgecombe.
All right, but beep.
I don't want any of your listeners, you know, come trying to hang out or take my.
No,
spot.
We're a good group, Michael. Believe me. But thank you for the call. But so Michael is saying kind of what I was thinking. You kind of can chill out and relax. But I read an article years ago, and again, I'd be curious if you'd be willing to ride in a self-driving car. 800-848-9222. I read an article years ago in which it talked about how good drivers, which I don't pretend to be, and clearly Michael is not, good drivers have senses and have an intuition that computers don't. For instance, an experienced truck driver, for instance, he can look at the eyes of another driver that's on the road and tell maybe that driver is groggy. Now, he's not doing that based on his movements like a computer might. He's doing it by looking at his eyes. And maybe you can also look at a driver in another vehicle and see that he's distracted or that he's seemingly a little drunk. Not because of his movements, but just because of his facial expression. That's something that I don't know that a computer will ever be able to do. Curious what you think. 800-848-9222. We'll continue with your calls in a minute. We'll talk with Chuck Darrow at 3:30 for the AC report. But in the meantime, I do want to talk to you about Life Change Tea. I really love telling people about Life Change Tea because it's a product that I enjoy. It's a great company with great natural ingredients in the product that I drink every day. And I think you, if you try it, you'll enjoy it as well. What is it? It's a tea specifically blended with a powerful herbal proprietary formula that gives you more energy without caffeine. So there's no chemicals or anything like that. It tastes great. There's no fillers, no GMOs. It's completely organic. It's a mild cleanse. So if you've ever had a difficult time being regular, shall we say, this cleanse that cleanses you from the inside out will help you along. That's why their slogan is the tea that makes you go. You can read the testimonials for yourself at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And if you order anything on that website, getthetea.com, and you use the promo code Frank, you'll be able to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. Getthetea.com is the website. The promo code is Frank. Free shipping is what you get. It's all natural. It's great. Getthetea.com. Promo code Frank.
Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much. I miss my wife. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight.
Midnight. It's Elton John singing Rocket Man. He's singing it all right there. Not nearly as good as the William Shatner version of this song. Excuse me. I want to thank Michael John for emailing me an article, and you can read it at facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. About how Ferrari and some other companies are experimenting with flying cars, and we may even see some flying cars in 2023. I just posted the article from Fox Business on facebook.com/MoranoFan. We're going to talk Atlantic City in just a few minutes, but I am curious, would you drive in one of these flying cars? Would you be a passenger? 800-848-9222. Larry's in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Yeah, hi, Frank. You know, when you were talking before about congested pricing, you sounded a little bit like Marie Antoinette, you know, when you said, let them eat cake. It's like, oh, the threat of congested pricing. What are you going to do when there is actual congestion pricing? I mean, what's your complaint going to be then?
Well, my complaint will be that I have to pay it.
Exactly. The point of the matter is this city is drowning in cars, and I attribute the dramatic increase to motor vehicle accidents that's just been documented, to the frustration of cars on the road because they can't move. So once they get a chance to go, they go very fast, and that goes for truck accidents, killing bike riders also, which has been a terrible thing over the past few years. They have to get rid of cars in New York City because there is lock jam. It has to become a commuter city. The MTA is in a tremendous deficit, and they want to raise, if not for COVID, they would have raised the fares in the fall, but they're postponing it a year. And so, it's already very high, the fare. They want to get rid of 7-day and 60-day Metro cards, which is a terrible thing.
I'm aware of that, Larry. So needless to say, you're a vote in favor of congestion pricing.
Big time, and you have to build bus lanes. The buses, they don't respect buses anymore like they used to.
You're right about that. Larry, look, I am a commuter. The only reason I don't take the bus here, as I did when I worked other hours, at which I'd prefer to do, is because the bus service where I live is very spotty at the time that I need to come in. So I would happily, if there was more bus service, I would happily ditch my vehicle in order for buses. However, I think the concern that a lot of people have about congestion pricing is that it might just become another tax, a regressive tax, on working class New Yorkers. Now, if we could make some sort of New York City resident exemption for congestion pricing, that, you know, it, Long Islanders are paying, Jersey people are paying, Connecticut people are paying, but somehow the five borough residents are exempt from it, and we can use that money that we're getting from congestion pricing to fund serious mass transit, then I could buy into it. But I think also part of the reluctance people have, and we're going to do a whole show on this as we get closer, and I've done whole congestion pricing shows in the past, but part of the reluctance people have is a mistrust of how the money is going to be used. The MTA has shown time and again that it's an incredibly mismanaged agency, and I think a lot of people say, is this really the agency we should hand a pot of money to?
Oh, I agree with that 100%. But I also agree that people within New York City, if you want to exempt them from congestion pricing, they should be limited not only to how many cars they have, but the size of the cars. Why should Detroit dictate how much space is taken up by a vehicle? Car sizes should be limited within the city.
Well, thanks, Larry. Look, we're not. It doesn't really address my conspiracy theory of whether traffic congestion is intentional in order to sell congestion pricing to people. But I appreciate the spirited phone call nonetheless. We're going to talk to Chuck Darrow in just a minute. Robert is in New Jersey. Hello, Robert.
Hi, how are you doing, Frank? Good morning.
Morning.
Let me know about the congestion pricing. They did this on purpose. You have a bike lane, you have a car parked in the middle of the street. They, from each avenue, they at least took off two lanes for other purpose. And this was in a plan a long time ago that started with probably with Bloomberg. And as of the self-driving cars, who would be responsible for any violations? Like, well, the driver
I think you put your head on, you put your finger on exactly why self-driving cars are not all over the streets now, because the insurance companies are unsure of who would be liable. And how do you hold a driver, quote unquote, driver or passenger responsible for a mistake that his vehicle makes? And I don't think that's something that anybody's figured out yet. But I think within the next year or two, Robert, there's going to be a lot of movement towards these self-driving cars. Thank you. John sent me a message on Facebook. And again, you could find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. There have been earlier tests on self-piloting cars that have resulted in death. Please look into a gentleman who was decapitated while testing one out. I believe a Google self-piloting car. They are dangerous. That's what I am surprised I have not heard from more people. But again, my hypothetical is just that, a hypothetical. If these tests go well, if you don't have all sorts of crashes, would you then drive one? All right, on to more exciting matters. The city of Atlantic City is pumping. I was there 2 weeks ago. The place was packed. I looked into trying to go back there this weekend to get a hotel room. It's either sold out or a fortune, anywhere you want to go. So what's behind Atlantic City being packed? Is this just summer in Atlantic City, or is this the beginning of a new Atlantic City renaissance? Well, if you go to Atlantic City regularly, or if you've never been there, you're going to want to listen to my conversation with Chuck Darrow as part of the AC Report straight ahead. This is The Other Side of Midnight.
This is the AC Report.
Just flew into town tonight. Was on our flight. First a bite to eat at Gino's down the street, and then we'll throw the dice. Glad to see you're born again, Atlantic City, my old friend. Be there when I bet on 10. I bet on you. Remember how they put you down? There's not an empty room in town. They're happy just to stand. They're eating from your hand. They've come from miles around. There's egg on everybody. second place, you sure came through.
The great Robert Goulet singing Atlantic City from the motion picture Atlantic City, a fine film. One of the few films ever to be nominated in all five major categories and lose every single one. Best picture, best director, best lead actress, best lead actress, and lost every single one. But as they say, it is an honor just being nominated. I am just thrilled to be able to talk with Chuck Darrow. When I started working with Joe Piscopo about 7 or 8 years ago, Joe said, any discussion of Atlantic City is incomplete without talking with Chuck Darrow. He said any understanding of the present, past, or future of Atlantic City is impossible without reading the work of Chuck Darrow. That's why I am just thrilled to welcome veteran journalist, casino lifestyle specialist, and a writer with the website bettorsinsider.com, Chuck Darrow. Chuck, thanks for joining us at such an odd hour.
Hey, not a problem at all, man. I'm flattered to be asked. Seriously, it really means a lot to me, and I'm happy to be talking to all my friends in Gotham City.
Well, we have a lot of listeners in South Jersey too, Chuck. We have listeners,
I know you do,
all over the area. But I think your friends in Gotham City are just as happy to hear from you. Now, I know a lot of your history. You've worked at some of the great newspapers ever. You had an incredible career, including writing for places like the Philadelphia Daily News. But for folks that don't know your background, you've been covering the Philadelphia and Atlantic City entertainment scene for, it's got to be over 40 years, right?
Unfortunately, next 2 months will be 47. Actually, technically, my October 4th will be the 47th anniversary of my first byline. Yeah.
Wow. Jeez. And
but
so
I started when I was 18, so I'm not quite as old as people may think. So,
you wrote for the Philadelphia Journal. You wrote for the Courier Post. I mentioned, you wrote for the Philadelphia Daily News. And in general, I'm sure you've seen quite a few changes in Atlantic City from 1970s until now.
Because I grew up in a part of Philadelphia where the culture was Atlantic City was our shore town, not Wildwood or Ocean City. So some of my earliest memories of my life are in Atlantic City, dating back to, I guess I was, 4 years old, maybe 5 years old, like that. So, yeah, I've seen a lot of changes. And even in the casino era, simply just the scope of the what is offered down there. Because remember, in the 70s, you had, by the time the 70s became the 80s, you had, I guess, three basically in 78 and 79 would have been Bally's. Well, Resorts was first, of course, and Bally's, Caesars were the other two. And then so just the variety of the offerings, because each casino, every casino has the same slot machines. They all blackjack tables look alike. All craps tables are pretty much the same. But every casino, the 9 that are there now, and at one point for many years there were 12, each one has a personality. Each one caters to a different type of audience, both demographically, also culturally. Well, I guess it's kind of the same thing, so I might be redundant. But also, financially as well. More upscale or well-heeled players and customers are going to tend to go to one group of casinos, where perhaps someone in lower economic brackets might choose to go others. So it's fascinating, and it's fascinating that Atlantic City, you can't kill it. I don't want to say it's the cockroach of gaming jurisdictions, because that obviously is incredibly negative. But what I mean is that the resilience of that town, you mentioned how when you were there a couple of weeks ago, just how rocking it was. And it didn't surprise me. I kind of predicted it, not that I'm some sort of genius. It made sense. We were locked down for 15 months. And human beings are communal by nature. And Atlantic City is a great already casino jurisdiction, not just Atlantic City, but it's a place, it's just more fun to do things that you can do at home, by and large. Sure, you can play slot machines on your phone, but it's not the same as being in a casino. There's an excitement and just an electricity in any casino, well, not just in Atlantic City.
No doubt. I certainly agree with that. And it's funny, there are places that used to be, the reason Atlantic City did so well is that it was basically an East Coast gambling monopoly. Now, wherever you go, wherever you live, you're within a day of being able to drive to legal casino gambling.
I think for the most part, you're probably no more than 2 or 3 hours, not 24.
Right.
I mean, there are very few states. I think there's only 3 or 4 states, including Hawaii, where there is absolutely no form of casino gambling.
Part of what makes Atlantic City so special, though, has to do, in my judgment, with not just the casinos themselves, but the town itself. It's such a unique history and mixture of people. But tell folks what you're doing now. You're writing for this website, BettorsInsider.com, BettorsInsider.com. What is that? What is Bettors Insider?
It is as good a sports information site as you will find. It is not unique in its intent or its mission. Essentially, BettorsInsider.com provides information for people who bet, primarily for people who bet on sporting events. But like I said, there are a lot of sites that you can go to for advice. The difference between them and us is that our staff, which is literally worldwide, we have like incredible coverage of things like European soccer, which may actually be the most popular sport of all in terms of our readership or audience. But essentially, we have a network of professional sports writers, real experts, not just some guys or women sitting in their mom's basement to saying, I like the Yankees tonight. No, it doesn't work that way. We have, for instance, one of our regular and main writers is the former sports editor of the Philly Daily News, which for decades was seen as one of the 2 or 3 top sports sections in the country. So we have information and expertise that you really can't find in a lot of other places. I'm not saying we're the only ones, but in terms of this kind of website, what they call a tout site, I guess might be one way of putting it. If you're a sports bettor and you're really looking to get a handle on what bets should be made, we offer analysis. We offer stats. We have a stats guy, a genius named Bob Vitrone Jr. He goes by the handle of Boop and Boop Stats. And he is just incredible when it comes out for proposition bets. This is the guy you need to follow because he comes up with the most incredible information. I mean, really obscure things that most people wouldn't even think to research. So anyway, what happened was the website was started by there were originally 3 former employees of the Philly Daily News. And in late 2018, and they decided to do this website, but they said, well, there are other sites like this. What can we do to make it a little different? And they hit on, we should have coverage of, because the site is based in the Philly area, so we should have regular coverage of the bricks and mortar casinos in Atlantic City and southeastern Pennsylvania, and really now the whole state. Mm. And for better or worse, covering the casinos has been my brand, if you will, for 35 years at least.
Yeah.
And even I've been doing it technically. I'm not sure there's anyone who's covered Atlantic City longer than I have, because I was actually in Atlantic City in November of 76 when the casino referendum was passed.
Yeah, I think that's probably true based on my research. I can't find anybody that's done it longer. Talking with Chuck Darrow, a longtime journalist, casino lifestyle specialist. These days he's a writer for BettorsInsider.com. So, Chuck, Give us the good, the bad, and the ugly of how Atlantic City is now. My experience there 2 weeks ago, boardwalks, hotels, packed, not an empty room in town. Is that indicative of what we're seeing just about every weekend during the summer? And how typical or atypical is that from a typical Atlantic City summer?
Well, the summers are always that's where they make most of their money in the 8 or 10 weeks of warm weather. And again, it's always been thus in Atlantic City from the time in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Atlantic City really was a 10-week season, and that aspect of it hasn't changed. But what I've been down there several times recently on weekdays, and to me, the ultimate gauge of the kind of business a casino, regardless of which property it is, but a great gauge is when I go into the parking garage, how many floors up do I have to travel before I can find a parking spot? And I've been hitting the high end there in Harrah's recently and Bally's, which is kind of one of the big stories this summer because it's under new ownership, relatively new ownership from last fall. And they're doing a lot of things with that property that haven't been done for many years. So that's a great sign. I think really the best gauge of all, though, is how much capital investment is currently going on or currently being put into the casinos, the 9 casinos in Atlantic City. I don't know the exact number, but it's in the hundreds of millions of dollars. When I say capital improvements, for instance, Bally's, again, I believe that they are refurbishing every single hotel room. I mean, they're doing a lot of other things too. For instance, today, if you're any kind of casino, whether it's here or elsewhere, excuse me, you have to have a first-class spa. That just goes without saying. Mm. And really, the first casino, at least in the East, in Atlantic City, to invest heavily in that kind of facility was Bally's about 25, 30 years, maybe more now, 30, 35 years ago. And they old ownership let it go. And now the new owners have come and said, yeah, you know what? This is a signature of the property, and it should be restored to its original condition, where it really, really was an attraction unto itself. It was, like I said, the first real high-end, ultra-luxe spa in a hotel spa in Atlantic City. So that there's no question Atlantic City is on the upswing. Now, recently, this is last week or so, the numbers came out. Always the revenue is judged year over year. So if a casino made in July of 2020, their total revenue was $10 million, and this July it will be $20 million, then that's 100% increase. Again, those are just figures. No one has ever had a 100% increase
right.
In a year.
Talking with Chuck Darrow. Chuck, so what do you think is the reason for the uptick in gambling at Atlantic City casinos, given that there are so many other places to gamble?
Well,
are people just pent up and eager to get out and party? Is it that, or is it something else?
It's something else. And that's where I started to say that it's kind of misleading, because that uptick, like I said, in June, I believe the number total revenue was $345 million, if I'm not mistaken, and that broke all existing records. But the actual casinos themselves, again, the brick and mortar casinos, actually wound up losing money year to year, but online gambling and sports betting is making up the difference and then some. So we can't be fooled by these numbers. That said, again, it's just that after so long of not being able to go out and do anything, and Atlantic City is very convenient to 50 million people,
mm-hmm.
something like within a 3 or 3.5 hour drive. So it makes sense, especially with gas prices still rising. It's a relatively inexpensive trip. And Atlantic City has its charms. It does have the boardwalk. It does have a great free, and I emphasize the word free, beach. The restaurants, there's a bunch of new restaurants that have opened, and a couple more that will open in the next few weeks. And dining, of course, has become one of the great pastimes in America. It never was. You know, when I was a kid, we went out, you know, to the diner or the deli, but dining out was not a leisure time activity. It's what you did because you had to eat. You didn't want to eat at home.
Right.
But of course, and the restaurant inventory in Atlantic City is expanding. So far, I've gone to two of the new restaurants, Rum Point Crab House at Harris and Jerry Longo's Meatballs and Martinis at Bally's.
Yeah.
And both of them have been absolutely fabulous.
I'm looking forward to trying both. Chuck, well, I could talk with you about this stuff all day. Two final questions. One,
sure.
What's happening in Atlantic City this weekend for people that are down there or considering heading down there? And two, what's the situation like outside of the casinos? A lot of times people will call who haven't been there in a while, and they'll ask about things like crime or urban blight. What's the situation like outside of the casinos?
Okay, well, let's take the first question first. The coolest event, boy, sorry about that. The coolest event of all this weekend is there are actually two events in as one: Mob Movie Con and Sopranos Con, and it's essentially con meaning convention, as in Comic Con. And this is a gathering, weekend gathering, Saturday and Sunday at Harris Resort over on the bay there, and it is just a convention for fans of mob movies and specific and the Sopranos, but also mob movies in general. So that could be anything from Donnie Brasco to Godfather to Goodfellas and so on and so forth. And like any other pop culture convention, there'll be plenty of celebrities. Lorraine Bracco, who is one of the true superstars of that genre because she had starring roles in both Goodfellas and Sopranos. Will be there. Paul Sorvino, who played Paulie Cicero in Goodfellas, will be there. A lot of Sopranos cast members. None of the big stars, but a lot of the secondary recurring characters. Well,
it sounds like a lot of fun. And briefly, Chuck, because we do have to run, the situation outside of the casinos, what's it like these days?
Right. It's a city. It's a city that attracts a lot of money. I have never found it to be overtly dangerous. Of course, like any city, there are neighborhoods that you want to avoid. And like any other city, yes, I think probably gun violence has spiked down there. But if you stay on the main roads, travels, especially during the day, wouldn't be as much of a problem. Anything could happen to anyone, anywhere, at any time, especially New Yorkers know that. So I don't think that should... While it could get a lot better, I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say, oh, it's no problem. It's a wonderful place. You know, crime, what crime? Yeah, there's plenty of street crime and things like that. There always was. But I don't believe that I should keep someone as long from going there. You know, be smart. Stay on the main roads. Don't go into the neighborhoods if you don't have to.
Chuck, I'm looking forward to seeing you there. I'm hoping to make it down there within the next few weeks. Certainly,
let me know, man.
By the end of August, and I'll see you down there, and we'll have to hang and compare notes.
Please let me know, man. And thank you again for letting me come on and talk. I love nothing more than hearing myself talk.
Chuck Darrow, you can read him in bettorsinsider.com. He has a lot of great work in there, bettorsinsider.com. 800-848-WABC. We'll take your calls on any subject next. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills. Put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown. Engines on.
The great William Shatner singing Space Oddity, singing Major Tom Space Oddity from the album Searching for Major Tom, which is probably my favorite album of his. How much fun does that mob movie con sound like? I wish I could get there. I'm looking at hotel rooms. They're out of control for Saturday. There's no way. And I especially would like to get there because I'm on this hot streak. You know, I got to keep playing until my hot streak cools. But maybe it's for the best that I spend a weekend home. But it does sound like a lot of fun. If you end up going, I would be curious as to how it is, if it's all hype or if it's going to be actually as cool as it sounds. Frank.Morano at WABCRadio.com. Mark is in Flushing. Mark, we only have a minute here, but it's all yours.
I've been professionally driving since 1981. I have about 3.5 million miles, professional miles, no accidents, no tickets, no points. There is no damn way that I would get in a car with a driverless car. Not going to happen. There's too many clues out there that, you know, we've all been trained and stuff, you know, to look for them. There's, you know, you're not looking straight ahead of you. You're looking on the side. You look behind you. You look on the side of the
Mark,
road.
I have to
you're
ask you to, I have to pause you there. I appreciate the perspective. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Tired yet? I hope you're not either. This is The Other Side of Midnight. If you look at what's in the news, it is enough. Is it enough to make you depressed? You look and you see violent crime in one direction. You look in another direction and you see bitter, bitter partisanship enveloping discussion about everything from COVID relief to the infrastructure bill. Speaking of COVID, looks like that Delta variant is back. And with the Delta variant coming around, you see mask mandates coming back. How soon until we have full-scale lockdowns? It's all enough to be awfully depressing. See Olympic athletes taking a knee in protest of discrimination that they've not experienced. Has there ever been a better time to enjoy a laugh? So as I was going through the news today, yesterday technically, I thought, all right, it's been a while since we did this. Why don't we do one of our patented make me laugh segments? Now, this is what they call it, Be Funny, when Tom Likas did it. Different people have done this on different radio shows. We'll call it Be Funny. Now, the rules are quite simple. I want you to call 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC and tell a joke. Now, it doesn't have to be a great joke. It could be a knock-knock joke. It can be any kind of joke. The only thing that we ask is that it be a joke that you can tell on the radio, which means obviously that it can't include profanity. And look, I don't think we can deal with graphic sexual content. Beyond that, as long as we can say it on the radio, we want to hear it. 800-848-WABC will give you extra bonus points for original jokes. But it's been a while since we did this. I thought it might be fun, and I thought people could use a laugh given everything that is going on in the world today. And when the jokes stop, that's when the segment stops. 800-848-WABC. Let's begin with Mark. Mark in New Haven. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Frank. I could do 20 minutes, but we'll do one. I changed my mind about which one we'll do. This is the nun who went to see the new parish priest and said, "Excuse me, Father, I'm sorry to bother you, but my refrigerator is not working. Can you please call a plumber and ask him to repair my refrigerator?" And he said, no, sister, it's not your refrigerator. It's not my refrigerator. It's ours in the Lord. It's our refrigerator. She goes, "Thank you, Father." A few weeks later, she comes back in the office and said, "Excuse me, Father, I'm sorry to bother you, but my faucet's leaking. Could you please call a plumber and ask him to repair my faucet?" He said, no, sister. It's not your faucet. It's not my faucet. It's our faucet. And fine. So she comes back a couple of months later, only this time the bishop is sitting across the desk from the priest. And she says, oh, Your Eminence, I didn't know you were here. I'll come back some other time. And he was from the same village in Ireland because I like to do the accent. He goes, no, sister, we were just having a pleasant conversation. Go ahead and state the nature of your business to the father. She says, no, I think I'd prefer to come back another time. No, I insist. Tell the father what's on your mind. Well, okay. I just came to tell the father that there's a mouse under our bed.
All right. That is a good one, Mark. 800-848-WABC if you want to be funny. Ray in Queens, what do you have for us?
A high school kid finally gets up enough nerve to go buy his first box of condoms. So he goes into the convenience store and asks the clerk how much for a box of condoms. The clerk says $3.99 plus tax. The kid says, tax? Don't they stay on by themselves?
Oh! That's not bad. That's not bad. That's not as good. So far, my Mark in New Haven, I'm going to write that down. Mark in New Haven is my favorite joke thus far. But if you have a joke, now's the time. 800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. Michael in Manhattan, go ahead and be funny.
Okay. So there's a religious organization that welcomes in all people to their services. And a couple of women escorts decided to take them up on the offer, so they came into the service. Would you, you have priests in a church setting. Would these women be called lay members?
It's not bad. Yeah, and Michael, just for my own edification, and I think I know the answer to this, but what phone service do you have? Do you speak to us from? It's got to be AT&T, right?
I have T-Crapmobile.
I see. Yes, okay. I knew that was – you could always tell when someone is on a Verizon line versus when it is any other phone line. You just can tell. 800-848-WABC if you have what it takes to make us laugh. 1-800-848-9222. Sal, go ahead and be funny.
Hey, how you doing? Mayor de Blasio says he wants to get rid of the bike lanes. That's only after the last person in New York had their last bike stolen. Also, people are fighting in airplanes. If you want to fight at 30,000 feet, go to the bleachers at Yankee Stadium. Same price, same height.
Is that the punchline?
Yeah, it's early in the morning.
All right, okay, Sal. I appreciate these.
I got another one.
All right, go ahead. Well, okay, I should hope so. Go ahead.
Archaeologists found a huge fossil of a dinosaur with huge teeth. They say it either died of a meteor strike or gingivitis.
Okay, Michael. Sal, thank you. 800-848-WABC. I appreciate that, Sal. If you have what it takes, we got to do a little bit better than that, folks. I mean, that's... When you're not even sure when the joke has ended, that's probably an indication that it's not working. 800-848-9222. Joe is in Howard Beach. What do you have for us, Joe? Joe?
Yes, hello.
Go ahead, Joe. Be heard.
Frankie, I got a gun with 5 bullets in it. 5 bullets. Right? I got the Blasio in the room. I got Charles Schumer in the room. And I got Sharpton in the room. What do I do here?
I give up.
Right? Shoot Sharpton twice. Right? Shoot at the Blasio twice, miss once, and the other one I shoot Schumer.
All right. Well, I don't love jokes about shooting public officials. I disagree with Al Sharpton. I don't love jokes about murdering him either. jokes about murdering real people, I don't know. I don't think that's funny. I mean, God forbid something, especially Al Sharpton, who's actually been stabbed. What if someone stabs him tomorrow? Are we going to be laughing about it? I don't. That's not my kind of humor. Don't love jokes about shooting the Senate majority leader or the mayor. These are, you like them, dislike them. Schumer, again, there's a husband and a father. You don't want to joke about somebody being murdered. 800-848-WABC. I would love it if you have a joke. Mike in Manhattan, what do you have for us?
Hello?
Yes, Mike, go ahead.
Oh, hi. Boy, that was fast. Okay, these three little boys, this is a very innocent joke. These three little boys went into confession on a Saturday, and they go in one at a time. And one of them goes in and he says, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I lied to my teacher and I hit my little sister and I threw pebbles in the lake." He said, "Okay, three Hail Marys." One, the next kid goes in, he says, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I played hooky and I didn't do my homework, and I threw pebbles in the lake." And he said, "Okay, three Hail Marys." So the third kid comes in and he says, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I stole a candy bar and I told a big lie." And he said, "All right." He said, "Now, didn't you come in with the other two little boys?" And he said, "Yes, Father." He said, "Did you throw pebbles in the lake?" He said, "No, Father, I'm pebbles."
That's not bad. All right. 800-848-WABC. Tom in Livingston, I presume. Tom, turn your radio off, please. All right, we'll come back to you, Tom. Turn your radio off. Steve in Long Island, hello.
Hey, how you doing? Governor Cuomo says hospitalizations in Staten Island have tripled over the last 3 weeks. It's not from COVID. It just means pay your bookie on time.
Oh, that's not bad. I like it. Okay, that's good. 800-848-9222. Marius in Far Rockaway. Hello, Marius. Oh, no, I'm sorry. You're the victim of an unfortunate Eric spelling error. Marcus in Far Rockaway. Let us be heard. Go ahead.
Yes, hello there. Okay, I got an original joke for you. You know why I say you have the granola life living in New York?
Wait, repeat it. You know why I say what? The granola in New York?
Why I say you have the granola of life living in New York.
The granola of life living in New York. Why?
Because if you don't meet a food or a flake, you meet a nut.
All right, that's not bad. Okay, all right. 800-848-WABC. Barbara in New Jersey. What do you have for us, Barbara?
What did the Kleenex say to his other Kleenex back on dancing on Saturday night?
I came to boogie.
Yeah, that's it. You're right.
Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Not bad. 800-848-WABC. Tom in Livingston, I presume. Go ahead.
Nurse walks into the doctor's office, says, "Doctor, there's a man in the waiting room, says he's invisible. What should I do?" Doctor says, "Tell him I can't see him today."
That's not bad. I do like that. That's good. Very well done. 800-848-9222. Let's say hello to Victor in Pennsylvania. Hello, Victor.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Good.
All right. So there's a situation with the church going on, right? So the father calls one of the money guys, collects the money. He goes, "I have to speak to you." So the guy goes into the room. He goes, "Sit on that side. I want to sit on this side. We're going to keep this room."
Victor, we can't hear you. Victor, you got to try and get to a better area. You're, I think, another AT&T person. Eric, make sure we can hear these folks if you can. 800-848-WABC. Cap is in Nevada. Hello, Cap.
I don't like...
Sorry?
I'm sorry. Excuse me. I don't like the word pox. I don't like it.
Is that the whole joke?
Well, that's most of it. Do you want more?
I don't. We'll quit while we're behind on that one. 800-848-9222. We'll try again with Victor in Pennsylvania. All right, Victor, give it another shot.
Okay, Frank, so you can hear me better now?
I think so. Go ahead. Don't move.
Okay, so there's a situation going on in the church, right? The father calls the guy to take the money, picks up the money in the church. He says, we have to talk. He says, okay, so he sits in not a confession room. He goes, you go on that side, come on this side. So the father goes, so we have a situation. They're saying that you're taking money from the church. I can't hear you, father. Father says, let me speak a little louder. He says, I heard you've been taking money from the church. I want to know if it's true. I need you to confess. He says, I can't hear you, father. Why don't you come on this side and you can see that you can't hear? So the father sits on the other side. He goes over there. He says, hey, father, I heard you've been sleeping with my sister. And the father goes, hey, you're right. Can't hear nothing.
Not bad, Victor. All right. 800-848-9222. Michael is in Queens. Hello, Michael.
Good morning. They're talking about these murder hornets again. They say they're dangerous, unpredictable, and they can fly anywhere in the U.S. It's the insect version of Spirit Airlines.
Ah! All right. I like it. Jamie in New Jersey. Hello.
Hello. How you doing? A guy walks into the psychiatrist's office wearing nothing but saran wrap. The psychiatrist says, I can clearly see your nuts.
An oldie but a goodie. 800-848-WABC. Maureen in Patterson. Hello.
Hi, Frank. Why did the little shoe leave home?
I give up.
Because his mother was a sneaker and his father was a loafer.
Ah, very well done. That's good. Lon in Washington Heights. Lon, hello.
Hello. Why are there only 239 beans in Irish bean soup?
I give up.
Because if there was one more, it'd be too farty.
Okay. All right. I like it, Lon. Very good. Well done. 800-848-9222. I like it when I can't.
Hey, Frank, can I get in on this?
Go ahead. Absolutely.
So here's one. So a jumper cable walks into a bar, and the bartender says, look, I'll serve you, but don't start anything.
That's not bad. Give yourself a rim shot for that. That's not bad. 800-848-9222. Pete is in Hackensack. Hello, Pete.
Hey, how are you? What's happening, Frank? They're having a conference, like a sex conference. They're trying to figure out who makes the best lovers, you know? So, you know, they figured, is it, you know, this race, the white guy, the colored guy, the Puerto Rican guy, and the lady there finally figured out that it is Native American Jewish people that make the best lovers, have the best libido. So at the end of the conference, I go up and introduce myself. She says, hi, who are you? I says, Tonto Ginsburg.
Not bad. Not bad, Pete. Not bad. 800-848-WABC. Steve in Manhattan, dare I ask?
It's a heartache, nothing but... Stop the music! Now, Frank, this is going to be a double joke now, okay? You take Bongo's Mike's brain, you put it in a bird's head, the bird will fly backwards. But now, if you take Harpo's brain and put it in a bird's head, the bird will start screaming out the 800 number.
Now, just so I'm aware, who is Bongo Mike? Does anybody know who he makes reference to with Bongo Mike?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I feel like that's Bongo part Mike of what's lost on Steve's attempts at humor, is that if people don't know who he's referring to, then is it really that funny? I don't know. All right, I'm going to give you one, and then we'll take three or four more, unless there's anybody that has anything really good in the next 2 minutes. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. So there's two little kids, pretty well-behaved kids, but they're getting on in years. One is 6 years old. One is 8 years old. And the two of them decide one night, they share a bedroom, and they decide that now that they're getting older, that they're going to start using profanity. And one little boy, one kid, I think his name was Anthony, says to his brother, Sammy, says, you know, what word are you going to be using? So Sammy says, I'm going to use the word hell. And then Anthony says, all right, well, that's a good one. Okay. I'm going to use the word ass. So the next day, next morning at breakfast, their mother asks them what they want for breakfast. So she turns first to Sammy the younger of the two. And she says, Sammy, what do you want for breakfast? And Sammy says, hell, I'll have some Cheerios. The mother goes nuts. She says, where did you learn to talk like that? Go to your room. You are punished. You are grounded. You're not doing anything. No video games, nothing. And then she turns to Anthony and says, all right, well, what do you want for breakfast? And Anthony says, well, you bet your ass I don't want Cheerios. That's pretty good, isn't it? 800-848-WABC. Anthony in Jersey City. Hello.
How you doing? So, New York City banned plastic bags. So it's going to help the environment, but it'll force the homeless to invent new rain bonnets.
Okay. Not bad. We'll do two final ones here. 800-848-WABC. Joe in Ronkonkoma. What do you have for us, Joe?
Hey, Frank. How you doing? Great segment.
Thanks.
I got two. One's a real quick one.
Mm-hmm.
A real joke is Steve from Manhattan. And the second one, three guys are going to jail, an Italian guy, a German guy, and a Polish guy. And they can each take one thing with them. They go to the Italian guy first, and the Italian guy says he wants to take his wife. They lock him up for 10 years. You go to the German guy says he loves sausages. That's all he wants is sausage. So they lock him up for 10 years. They go to the Polish guy, and the Polish guy says, I love cigarettes. So they load his cell with cigarettes, and they lock the door. They come back 10 years later. They open the Italian guy's cell, and he's loaded with kids. His wife's out of breath, and they come out. They go to the German guy's thing. They open it up, and he's overweight. He's eating all these sausages, and he's happy. They open up the Polish guy's cell, and he's clapping on his pants, he's clapping on his pocket, and they said, what's wrong? Does anybody have a match?
Thank you, Joe. 800-848-WABC. Isaac is in Manhattan. Hello, Isaac.
Good morning, Frank.
Morning.
Where are baseball uniforms made?
I give up.
New Jersey.
Hey! Not bad. I love a good, that's a good pun. It's a punny joke. And we will end with Johnny in New Jersey. Hello, John.
Hey, Frank, how are you?
Good.
Bongo Mike is Mike from West Palm. Harpo Mark apparently is Frankie Russo. But here's my joke. It's a two-parter. What do you call a gay male dinosaur?
A gay male dinosaur?
Yes.
I give up.
A megasaurus. And what do you call a female gay dinosaur?
I'm afraid to ask.
A licolatopus.
All right. I think that's as good a time as any to end that segment. All right. 800-848-9222. If you didn't get to be heard with a joke, at the end of the show, we do 15 seconds of fame, and you can say whatever you want for 15 seconds, and that'll be fun. All right. We'll be right back on the other side of midnight, straight ahead.
It's the other side of midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Would you like to swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are? Or would you rather be a mule? A mule is an animal with long, funny ears, kicks up at anything he hears.
His back is brawny, but his brain is weak. He's just plain stupid with a stubborn streak.
And by the way, if you hate to go to school, you may grow up to be a mule.
Or would you like to swing on a star, carry moonbeams home in a jar, and be better off than you are?
Or would you rather be a pig?
The great Bing Crosby, would you like to swing on a star? This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. If you want to join our Facebook group, it's a place where people who listen to this show participate in conversations about that show. Criticism is certainly welcome. All you have to do is search on Facebook, Morano Radio Fans and Haters. Obviously, positive feedback is welcome as well. And debates about certain segments are welcome as well. If you liked Earl Swift, if you didn't like Earl Swift, what you were were interested in Earl Swift saying, Chuck Darrow, you know, any subject that we cover, any guests that we have. One of the, and she doesn't always say nice things about me, but most, I'd say 90% of the time she does, but someone whose comments that I really always appreciate in the Facebook group is Ellen Metzger. You could tell she really listens to the show, really pays attention to this show, and puts a lot of effort into those comments. They're always very thorough. They're always very well thought out. And I really gave her a lot of credit yesterday because I think she knows that a lot of the people that listen to the show aren't crazy about Anthony Fauci. And I played the whole Anthony Fauci-Rand Paul debate yesterday, all 5 minutes of it. And even though she knew that she was kind of stepping into the lion's den, she put her comments about Fauci and Rand Paul right out there, which says, I don't like what Rand Paul was saying to Fauci. And some other people had some intelligent things to say in response. So I've been trying to keep it civil. If anybody's going to make like a personal attack on one of the other people in the group or say something so totally over the top and insulting, then I try and hide that comment. But I really try to exercise no censorship at all, unless it's such an egregious and overt personal attack on somebody. Or at least it's, unless it's not related to the show, then I kind of let everybody do their thing. So if you want to join our Facebook group, go to Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's M-O-R-A-N-O Radio Fans and Haters. And do encourage you to just join our plain old regular Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. What's up there now is the video of Curtis Sliwa in the Bronx confronting that mentally disturbed man when he was out there to do his press conference. So you could check that out. We're on Twitter as well, at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. You know what I'm trying to figure out? I got an invitation to a friend of mine's 60th birthday. And she's a pretty good friend of mine. She's somebody I've known for, I guess, about 20 years. But you know, I don't see her as often these days. She's moved mostly to the Jersey Shore, I think. And with COVID, nobody kind of saw anybody. And she used to be part of my regular Friday night group, and these days she's not. But I think it's going to be a pretty good party. Lo and behold, usually my wife is on top of these things, but she did not RSVP on her behalf. So I missed the RSVP date. Now, I think the party is August 6th. It's coming up in just a couple of weeks. And it's in New Jersey, Seabright, I think. I think if I were to RSVP to the organizers of this party, that they would still happily let me go. I mean, meaning welcome me. Now, Rachel is not really friends with this person. So Rachel is my wife. My wife said, I don't really want to go. I'm going to skip it. We have something almost every other weekend. So I'm not sure whether I kind of feel a lot of pressure to make a decision about this today. I'm not sure whether I should go to the party. Clearly, if my wife's not into going, I'm not going to pressure her to go. She's with child, and the last thing she needs is to be pressured to go to a party that she doesn't feel like going to. But it is going to be a lot less fun if I'm without her. So I don't know if I should try and go solo, if I should not go, if I should get a Rachel-approved substitute companion for the evening. I'm not sure how to handle it, but I'm going to have to make a decision on this quickly. See, it really does seem like so much of my day is deciding how to respond to invitations. And, I mean, I guess it's not the worst problem in the world to have, but we already know how this is going to go. If I go to the party, then I'll resent having to drive to Seabright, New Jersey by myself and say, I wish I didn't go and I wish I was staying home reading or, you know, spending time with my wife or doing just not driving all the way to the Jersey Shore. If I don't go, then I feel like my friend will be a little annoyed that I didn't go to her banner birthday. It is a 60th birthday. It's not a 61st or a 58th. It's a big one, the 60th. I feel like she'll be a little annoyed and would really want me to come. And I do think it will probably be fun. So I'm wrestling with that, and I don't know which direction to go. So if you have thoughts on which direction you should go, I should go, you can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. The other thing is, I don't really have a good Rachel-approved substitute companion these days. I could ask my sister if she wants to go, but, you know, she's got her old social life. I'll see if she wants to go, maybe. But it's kind of, I really don't want to go solo. Email me if you have thoughts, because I've never been to Seabright, I don't think. I'm told it's a fun town to go to, and I figure I should check it out. But I wonder if there's any way I can make it on the way to Atlantic City. Doesn't look like it's near Atlantic City, but let me see if I can make it somehow on the way to Atlantic City. 800-848-WABC. Marie in the Boogie Down Bronx has been patiently holding. Hello, Marie.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, Marie. Go ahead.
Okay. I just want to comment on a mental health topic. I'm an insider. I'd just like to say that the hospital was a total disaster. I'm not approving of any person, no matter how seriously ill, overdrugged, and just thrown on the street again. Ben Shapiro made a good statement yesterday about private sector and government. The government has enough to worry about. Private sector, Jeff Bezos, $200 million, Mind Valley, and Dr. Amen ending mental health, rehabilitating those seriously mentally ill people. Wouldn't that be the best day of anyone's life? Really rehabilitating people, those people.
Yes. So how do we do it, in your view?
Private sector.
But, okay.
Bezos. He has the money.
So just
$200 million, Mind Valley. Have you ever heard of Mind Valley?
No.
Have you ever heard
what
of Dr. Amen?
What is Mind
Dr.
Valley?
Amen. Oh, you should look into it.
In well, tell me. Give me a summary. What is
Valley? Mind Valley. It's an organization. It's all about holistic practices, treating people like people. It's about enlightenment. We're not ruling out psychotropics. But not just relying on psychotropics. Dr. Unmen, look him up. He's, I think he's like Middle Eastern. He's talking about, he just released a book about ending mental health. Ending mental health, oh, for the elite? What about the people who are seriously mentally ill? I mean, those hospitals, they don't have funding. They're drugging people to death. And then they're feeding them bad food, and then they can't hold them. I mean, you look kind of like, would you like that to be done to you or your family? No. It's terrible. I think it needs to go into the hands of somebody who really wants to change the world. If you want to go into space, I think you need to evolve instead of going backwards.
Well, I don't disagree, Marie, but
right.
when we're talking the – Jeff Bezos, and thanks for the call. When we're talking Jeff Bezos or the private sector, so we're now talking the private sector. A private sector business exists to make money. Now, there are private for-profit mental health facilities. There's been a lot of problems with them. If we're saying that a guy like Jeff Bezos or anybody else, pick the rich person of your choice, should just give their money away in order for a charitable cause, then we're not talking about the private sector. We're now talking about the nonprofit sector, okay? There's some problems in the nonprofit sector as well. I think whether you're talking private sector, when it comes to treating mental health and mental illness, whether you're talking private sector, nonprofit sector, and government sector, a bigger problem or a bigger question to address than who is funding this and who is administering the care is what is the care? What are they actually doing? And I'm not convinced that any of those sectors, government, nonprofit, or private sector, necessarily have their finger on the pulse of the problem with the seriously mentally ill in New York especially, but I would say around the country. All right, 800-848-WABC. Straight ahead, Andrew Cuomo got a brushback pitch from the chair of the Judiciary Committee. Not the person you want to be ticking off these days. I'll tell you about it straight ahead.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC. 1,000 stars in the-
Midnight, I'm Frank Morano. So Andrew Cuomo is now facing a probe by the state attorney general. He's believed to be facing a federal criminal probe as well. And he's in the middle of an assembly impeachment proceeding. So, I mean, the guy's being investigated six ways from Sunday at the moment. And yet he and his staff are walking around like the most arrogant group of people in the world. So the governor has an aide. Well, let me back up. John Samuelson is one of the most prominent labor leaders in the state. He's the head of the powerful Transport Workers Union International. And just a week or two ago, he said he was over Cuomo. And he said he had skipped a recent fundraiser for Cuomo attended by other labor leaders. Quote, am I considering an alternative to Cuomo for governor? Absolutely, definitely. That was the quote in a New York Post article. So then Rich Azzapardi, a key aide to the governor, tweeted in response to that. This is what he tweeted, July 11th. My response, Samuelson is an extortionist who is trying to undo pension reform. We also understand he is a political supporter of Tish James, and she says she may run against the governor and he wants more benefits in his contract. Everyone gets that. So, first of all, the two things that he's saying are a little contradictory. One, he's saying he wants to undo pension reform, and then he's saying that he's a supporter of Tish James. Does anybody think that if Tish James is governor, she's going to undo pension reform? No way. No way. She wouldn't do anything with... No. I don't think. Well, I don't know. I guess maybe that's a political calculation. All right. So Azzapardi basically publicly undermines Tish James, the state attorney general, who's investigating his boss, whose lawyers spent 12 hours last weekend interviewing Governor Cuomo. So now the chair of the Assembly Judiciary Committee, Chuck Levine, didn't take kindly to that at all. And he sent a letter to Cuomo warning him about this. And Levine noted that he formally instructed Cuomo on March 15th, that neither you nor anyone associated with you should engage in witness intimidation or retaliation, and that James was conducting a parallel investigation to his committee's impeachment probe. So he writes in this letter, it's obvious that attempts to demean the attorney general serve as well to undermine the investigation and send profoundly negative signals to witnesses. In my view, that's clearly the case. That's clearly what the governor's staffer is trying to do. He's trying to belittle this investigation and to undermine its credibility and to discourage witnesses from participating. I mean, the onions on these guys. These guys, there's nothing that they are shameless. If I was being investigated by the state attorney general, I would... Everybody I know would never say a bad word about the state attorney general. And yet these guys are so arrogant. They think that by publicly undermining this investigation, it's going to serve them politically. Well, I hope that's not the case. And then lest anyone think that Azzapardi was just kind of freestyling here with no blessing from the governor. The governor's acting counsel, Beth Garvey, defended Azzopardi's tweet by saying there's a clear difference between actionable retaliation and protected speech, and it is clear that the chairman doesn't understand the difference. We will have a formal response forthcoming. So now the lawyer is firing back at the chairman of the Judiciary Committee that's launched an impeachment probe into the governor. These guys really think nothing can stop them. If there's ever been a group of people that could use a humbling, it is the Cuomo administration and the people that work in it. I mean, this is crazy, in my opinion, humble as it is. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Taking shots at everybody. The attorney general, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. All right, chill out. Maybe that's my problem. Maybe my problem is that if I was ever subject to an impeachment probe or an investigation by the state attorney general, I would sit there with my hands folded and make sure nobody I knew said anything negative about anybody investigating me. Maybe that's why these guys have won three terms in the governor's mansion. And I'm not doing bad. I'm sitting here on one of the best radio stations in America, albeit, you know, in the middle of the night. But I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly. So I'd love to know what you think of Governor Cuomo's response here and what the chairman of the Judiciary Committee said in this letter to the governor. I'll tell you, part of what I think is going on here is the assembly has been accused of slow walking their investigation into the governor and sort of taking their time to allow him to mount a little bit of a political comeback. And I think by Levine sending this letter, it's their way of showing the public, no, we're not slow walking anything. We're telling these guys where to go. We're keeping them in line. So that's part of what I think is going on here. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Call in at 800-848-WABC, or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. Be heard there, or on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, MoranO. Because clearly, I think this is going to be a very interesting result of this investigation, wherever it goes. I don't see Tish James running against the governor. Here's why. Because she has the power right now to destroy him. She could destroy him by issuing indictments or a report so damning that he could never recover from it, or a criminal referral to one of the local DAs or to the U.S. attorney. You remember what Andrew Cuomo did to Elliot Spitzer with the Troopergate report? You remember what Andrew Cuomo did to Governor David Patterson when Andrew Cuomo was Attorney General? Tish James could do the same thing right now. She could damage him irreparably right now. But, so, I think if she wants to be governor, she could get him out of the way by killing him with either indictments or a report that he can't recover from. But I don't see where she lets him off with a slap on the wrist and then decides, oh, this guy that I just didn't indict for anything, now I'm going to run against him. No, I mean, it doesn't make sense. If he survives this probe, the impeachment probe, the attorney general's probe, and the possible federal criminal probe, then he survives all three. He's going to look like a rock star. He's going to emerge more powerful than anybody. What do you think? 800-848-WABC. Steve is on the Lower East Side. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Frank. Thanks for taking my call. Now, I agree with you 100%. You know what? She could have definitely destroyed him if she wanted to. I think it's like everything else. The Democratic Party, I think they've already made deals. The Biden administration is going to do nothing against Cuomo. After all, he called them the gold standard. The only thing is, I don't understand. He must have made some deal with her because, like you said, if she was going to go after, to give him a slap on the wrist and then run against him as governor, it makes no sense at all. I don't know what's in play, but unfortunately, I think he's going to come out smelling like a rose, as they always do, and it's a shame because the guy's a walking disaster.
Yeah, I mean, and thanks for the call, Steve. But the one thing I want to make clear is there are a lot of Democrats in Albany, in fact, I would say most, that are rooting for Andrew Cuomo to fall on his face. Andrew Cuomo does not have a lot of friends in the legislature. He does not have a lot of friends in Gracie Mansion, doesn't have a lot of friends in the rest of the top echelons of state government. Almost every Democrat, if they're being honest, in Albany right now, they're all rooting for Andrew Cuomo to be gone. Because Andrew Cuomo, at this point, is the only Democratic candidate for governor that the Republicans actually have a chance of beating. If you're a Republican and you want the Republicans to win in 2022, your only hope is Andrew Cuomo. Because anyone else would win in a landslide. Cuomo would still be a favorite, but he's so damaged that he might not win. And a lot of Democrats know that. So I don't buy that it's this Democratic Party conspiracy where we all pat each other on the back and say, oh, we're so great. Let's go to the back of our smoke-free room and laugh. Ha, 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 ha. We're going to let Andrew Cuomo off. No, I don't buy that. I think they really want Cuomo to go down. Now, in terms of a possible deal with Cuomo and Tish James, there's certainly a scenario in which, you know, Andrew Cuomo could say to Tish James through intermediaries or even in a private conversation, look, this fourth term is going to be my last term. I'll support you to run after I'm gone, and I'll give you my full fundraising apparatus, the benefit of all my political personnel. Just give me a slap on the wrist. You can save face say I did bad things, say bad things about me. Just make it so it's not something that's irreparable in the damage it does. And then that's one deal that could be made. But that's a deal that would be a one-on-one deal between Cuomo and Tish James. 800-848-WABC. Steve in West Orange, hello.
Yes, good morning, and I very much enjoy your show and your thoughts.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk about your comments on Governor Cuomo, and I agree with your comments on him and his arrogance. I just don't want, and I appreciate that you're not making it partisan, and I don't think people should, because if you take out the name Governor Cuomo and replace it with former President Trump, your comments would have been exactly the same about attacking your attackers.
Steve, there are so many similarities between Cuomo and Trump. They love to attack the press. They love to belittle the press. They're blustering, in terms of peppering over their own mistakes is very similar. Now, I'm a Trump supporter, and I've never been a Cuomo supporter, but stylistically, not in terms of their actual policies, but stylistically, there are so many similarities between their management styles, between how they handle things publicly, between the way they like to use the media. Cuomo, during those half hour, 40 minute press conferences that he used to do at the height of COVID, he would have his aides watch which channels were carrying them for how long, and then he would pay such close attention to what the ratings were for his press conferences. Who does that sound like? Andrew Cuomo and Donald Trump are far too similar than either of them would care to admit. Thanks for the call, Steve. A lot of Steves tonight. If only we had one more Steve calling. Gee, if we had another Steve on the line, I would certainly go to him, but guess we're Steveless. So we'll be back with 15 seconds of fame. You can call in on any subject, say whatever you like, for 15 seconds and only 15 seconds. 800-848-9222. Steves are welcome, or even non-Steves. 1-800-848-WABC. 15 seconds of fame straight ahead.
The other side of midnight. This is 15 seconds of fame.
All right, 15 seconds and only 15 seconds. Say whatever you like. 1-800-848-9222. 1-800-848-WABC. The Irishman is in the Bronx. Hello.
Curtis Sliwa needs to foil the New York City Transit Authority for his New York City Transit police records. Not the NYPD for his NYPD records. the New York City Transit Authority for his New York City Transit police records, where he worked for his first...
Thank you, Irishman. Dara in New Jersey. Hello.
Hi. I just want to say there's a direct correlation between pull-ups and the inability of children raised on pull-ups to be grown adults. It's very clearly obvious through Pavlov's theories of potty training.
Thank you, Dara. Sal, hello.
Hey, Curtis Sliwa must be the next mayor. He never stops. The only person with more energy is Julia and Huggy's wedding planner.
Kathy in Brooklyn.
Yes, my 15 seconds of fame. I want to say New York City better wake up. They better vote for Curtis Sliwa to save our precious city. I don't care if you're Democrat. I don't care if you're Republican. We have to save our precious city, and Curtis Sliwa will be the mayor.
Gary in Staten Island.
Eric Adams, what does he have to say about critical race theory and stuff like that? What does he have to say about Farrakhan? Somebody has to start asking him some difficult questions. Somebody has to get inside a security perimeter and, like, blow it up.
Thank you, Gary. Hey, we're going to have to end it there. Mark, Tommy, Larry, Paul, call back tomorrow. We'll get to you guys first. That's a solemn promise. We'll do Ask Me Anything tomorrow. I believe John Stossel is scheduled to be on the show tomorrow as well. That should be fun, certainly interesting. Juliet Huddy and I have the news for you to be continued.